It's Friday!
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this final broadcast day of the month of March 2024. It's Friday on the front porch. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. All time zones in between in the great globe round, and where if you pop into the aforementioned Mary Wacky Zany right now, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers, Ralphs and Squeaky and Theo, and absolutely incompetently moderated by
moi.
I don't know. Maybe another moderator will pop in. Roger is taking a much-needed break, headed out. Well, I'm sure he's already at the Oregon coast and having a blast with his family. Oh, I need to hear the sound of the sea shushing up against the earth. Maybe that'll happen this summer. I'd really love it if it could. It's been too freaking long since I saw the ocean. There's Roger popping in as a non-moderator. Hey, Roger. Tell us how wonderful it is to be at the Oregon coast. We'd love that. Hi, I'm Robin. And like I said, it's Friday on the front porch. Listen, if you are a member of the Horn Family Community Congregation who enjoys the program via the podcast, please be so kind as to like each episode. If you listen over at TuneIn, please press that little heart button. It would be great if we could get 1,000 discreet. I don't know why I say that. 1,000 individual listeners via TuneIn. When I say, every time I say discreet, it's like I expect you to, you know, keep the fact quiet that you listen to the press. No, tell everybody, please. Leave a comment on whatever podcast platform where you listen, whether it be Podcast Republic, where it's really easy, or Odyssey, or Apple Podcasts, or Google Podcasts, or just about any other podcasting platform, because we try to make sure that the program is available on all of them. And leave a remark, a comment, a review. And it all helps to grow the Horn Family Community Congregation. Like I said, it blows my mind here. Oh, before the end of summer, just at Podbean alone, we will have served out 750,000 individual episodes. Discreet? No, don't. Not at all. Indiscreet episodes. Not very discreet around here, frankly. And let's see, doing the 300,000 that would be something like 2.65 million hours. Blows my little mind. I spent yesterday after the program, I spent my post-show time doing a little something-something. I was reading the instruction manual for the vacuum sealer that Kat kindly sent along, and I suspect I'm going to have a good reason to use it, say, come Sunday. And I need to, I'll need to consult with Brother Deacon Asa somewhere along the way, because I've got a hunk of beef tenderloin. No, I discovered it in the freezer, and I've set to thawing it out. And I think it would be really neat to do that and then just sear it up and, you know, do it in the sous vide and then sear it and serve it with, I don't know, something spring-like, maybe some asparagus with hollandaise sauce or fish jello. God, if you haven't seen Feud, Betty versus Joan, the scene in the very first episode where they're dining with Hedda Hopper and certain the table's being set and Hedda Hopper pulls the lid away. I think it's Betty who says, "Oh, yum, fish jello." Just the very combination of the word fish and the word jello was enough to drop me when I heard that a couple of nights ago. Thank you, Lee. There's a better word. Discreet listener. No, Lee says you want distinct listeners. Well, we're all distinct around here. I mean, what's next? Debonair listeners, Lee, really? And for the ladies in the audience, demure listeners. Oh dear, I feel I'm at risk of having been afflicted by the sillies. Like I said, it is Friday on the front porch, so here in about here in about 55 minutes, we'll go over the river and through the woods to the old holler tree, wherein we keep the extraordinary, ordinary round table, wherein we gather each and every Friday on the front porch. The old holler tree does, in fact, have a front porch. And we'll cuss and discuss the subjects, topics of the past week and see what's on people's minds. If you've never participated in the front porch, please feel you. Todd, how many times do people have to call, have to name check you to ask you to participate in Friday on the front porch? But more than just Todd, and ladies, please, women's voices are welcome. And I'd love to have more participation there. And if we make it easy, there's a button at the top of Head On Live. All you got to do is click it. And it'll carry you right over into the aforementioned old holler tree. So maybe give that some thought. And if, of course, if you can't access Skype, you can always use the stress line, 844-843-4676, and join in the merry and fast-paced dialogue that is Friday on the Front Porch. Matt in San Francisco, sous vide and the banshees. Yes, it must be live. She is live. We are live. And let me just say this for the Christians in the audience, that we have some. If you celebrate Easter, I hope you have a blessed Easter and can celebrate the meaning of the season. And it being Easter and everything, that... Well, there are Easter traditions here at the Horn, including this one. I tell this every Easter. It's kind of like telling the night before Thanksgiving shopping story before Thanksgiving. But many, many years ago, back around the turn of the 20th century, not the turn of the 21st, you know, there was a great deal of migration coming from Southern Europe. And there was a retired Roman Catholic priest who had crossed and had taken up residence in North Newark. And he wanted to be useful even in his old age. So he had a functional understanding of English. So he began offering English lessons for new immigrants to the United States so that they could more easily assimilate into American culture. And so one day, about this time of year, he was offering his English classes, and he tells his students, today we're going to talk about the holidays in the U.S. And Easter's coming. And in English, I want to know if you can tell me what Easter means. I used to tell this with a really horrible Italian accent. I don't know if I'm allowed to do that anymore. But young Mario recently arrived, raises his hand, and the old priest says, Mario, you tell us what Easter's all about. And Mario says, Easter, that's at that time of year when it's a cold in the winter and a big fat man coming down to the chimney and he bring presents to all the good little boys and the girls. And the old priest says, no, nice try, Mario, you said that very well, but that's Christmas when we celebrate the birth of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Anybody else want to try? And eventually Luigi raises his hand. And he says, Luigi, how about you? What's Easter mean? And Luigi proudly says, Easter's at a time of year when it's all hot in the summer and the bands play and they march up and down the street and the fireworks go boom at night and it's exciting. Well, you said that very well, Luigi, but no, that's Independence Day. That's when we celebrate the birth of our nation, the United States of America. That's the 4th of July. Luigi says, oh. And finally, old Nunzio, who hardly ever says anything, raises his trembling hand from the back of the class and he says, Nunzio, you try. And Nunzio stands up, looks at the priest, and says, many years ago, the Romans, they nailed up a Jesus of Christ on the cross. And they let him hang there 3 days till he died. And then, when he dead, they take a broken body down. And they wrap it up into the shroud, and they put it into the cave, and they roll a big rock in front of the cave. Make sure no animals get in, gnaw upon his sacred bones. And the old priest is just beaming, because Nunzio is older than the old priest is. He says, keep going, Nunzio. This is great. And Nunzio says, 3 days later, the rock, it'll get a roll away. And Jesus of Christ, he come a walking out raw, as alive as you and me, Father. The priest is just beaming now. He says, yes, go on. You've got this. And old Nunzio says, he walk out, he look a left, he look a right. He look it down on the ground, he see his shadow, run back in, don't come out 6 more weeks. I learned that joke in a bar in Atlanta, Georgia, in 1987. And I think of the bartender who taught it to me, who I fear may no longer be with us. I haven't heard from him since, like, 1988. Since, like, law school, 1990. But I fell apart just absolutely roaring with laughter, as did everybody else, because he did such a great job telling it. Bartender's name was Jeffrey. And I think I have told that joke on or about Easter every year since. Run back out. He looked down on the ground. He see his shadow. He run back in. He don't come out 6 more weeks. It's an oldie but a goodie. I hope you can forgive me. It's not done with any mean spirit. I just think it's charming and ridiculously funny. As to Todd joining in the front porch, and Todd may be busy on Friday. I don't know. Okay, says Steve, in addition to giving him my rocking chair, I will bring a box of Esther Price dark chocolate-covered potato chips. Oh, my God, that's... Wait, you're baiting the rocking chair with Esther Price chocolate-covered potato chips? Ah, you rogue. Emilio says, why do you have to call out Todd to participate in the front porch, Robin? That might seem mean to ask Todd to why he hasn't graced the group with his presence when we clearly want him there. Really? What's next? Asking if Tristan will please join us this evening? Tristan would be more than welcome, too. And, yes, the old holler tree, which we sublet from the Keebler Elves, Lou. You acknowledge the obligatory announcement. I did. I'm sorry I left them out. The relationship between me and the elves it's been good for a very long time, but I don't know. They got a little bit out of shape with me, but I'm hoping they sent along a book, and I've been reading it for a couple of days now. And it's really fun. The elves sent me a book by Jill Sherwin called Quotable Star Trek. And this is a 350-page book of Star Trek quotes. Indexed by topic. So I do owe a debt of gratitude to the Keebler Elves, and I'm going to try to stop calling you the Keebler Orcs or the Keebler Trolls, okay? Because that was mean. And you know what? The Keebler Elves are valid, and we see you. So hopefully that will make a bit of amends. Oh dear, it's raining in San Francisco, says Matt. It's a strange universal fact that San Franciscans forget how to drive when it rains. Wish me luck, Horn family. I've heard there are cities where it snows and people seem to figure out how to get from point A to point B. Maybe someday, but that day is not today. Well, as the late, great Jim Morrison said, Matt, keep your eyes on the road and your hands upon the wheel. Keep your eyes on the road, your hands upon the wheel. A non-obligatory Doors quote for this Friday on the front porch, the 29th day of March, 2024. And I don't know, for some reason or another, I'm overcome by the urge to give you that quote from Hill Street Blues. You be careful out there, Matt. Lee in New York says, since you're referencing holidays, there's a holiday where Jewish children dress in costumes and get presents. It's Purim. But what do I know about holidays? That's true. I know about Purim. It's based on, it's kind of like a Jewish Halloween that's based on one book of the Old Testament, the book of Esther. That ends up with a Persian bureaucrat named Haman, is it, Lee? who gets hanged. And there's some, and the fact that it's largely a children's holiday, and I'm sure there's some sort of treats involved and probably delicious. And it's got everything you want in a great children's story. Sex, betrayal, murder, death. But yes, I'm aware of Purim. That sounds yummy. Randy Radar says, I just had a honey ham Reuben in your honor, Robin. I didn't have any corned beef. Well, doggone it. That sounds delicious. Did you have some nice seeded rye? Was there sauerkraut? You really need a Thousand Island or a good vibrant mustard. Dear God, we're in the food porn already. Oh, Chris, thank you. By the way, this is a fundraising free Friday because we had a community-made miracle yesterday for Thorn in the Side Thursday. We're fully funded for the month of March. I will have health care for one more month. Yay! And I hope to continue the trend in April. But thank you, Chris in Oregon. Not our Christopher, different Chris. We have multiple members of the Society of Chris's. Chris in Oregon said, "Hey, Robin, I'm laid up with a foot boot for another week. Thanks for all you do, Chris in Olympia." Chris, I hate to hear that. What did you do? What did you do to your foot? Doggone it! I hate to hear that. I hope you're up and ambulatory again, oh so soon. It's a pity to be laid up when the good weather comes. I mean, if you're laid up in the frozen, snowy weather, you just snuggle under the blankets and, I don't know, curse the darkness or something. But Chris, I hope you recover soon. And thank you for helping out. Thank you so much. And Dave in the Blind says, subject line, crucifixion. God, sometimes I miss my reverb. Hey, gang, happy Good Friday to all for those who celebrate. I hope you got nailed in real good this year. The octopi have been busy down at the shop. They're working out great. We did 300 crucifixions in 2 hours. Now comes the $300 burials, which will take most of the night. I'd like your advice, Horn Family Community Congregation. Should I rent out the graves like they do in many European cemeteries? I figured give you the first 3 days for free and then $10,000 a year thereafter, or you may opt for our perpetual plan by paying this $1.5 million cash per slot. Also, I'm considering a resurrectionist business, but is body snatching still a thing? Your buddy Dave in the Blind. Hoppy Easter. Ah! And Annette and I were joking the other day about our dear departed friend Peter Godbold, who used to have a running gag about this time every year of how he would crucify a chocolate Easter bunny in his yard every Easter. Peter was so amazing. As to the foot boot, Chris in Olympia says, it was a tendon stretch. I had to have it done or have foot problems continuous, so hopefully this will take care of it. I hope so, too. Oh, so that's, ooh, so is that like the Achilles tendon? You know, there's that old saying out there, Chris, that an ankle sprain is worse than a break. And there are two areas of connective tissues that just three there are, that are just an absolute booger to heal. And one is the Achilles tendon, the other is the hamstring, and the third, of course, and you hear about this a lot in sports, you know, the pulled groin muscle. And you always want to say pulled groin muscle because sometimes in sports reporting they'll just say pulled groin, and the mental image is a bit much. Chris, okay, there we go. Lee in New York says, you have Purim correct. The food is Hamantaschen. They are triangular cookies because Haman wore a three-pointed hat. Wait, like the founding fathers? Haman was the bad guy who got power and hated people of a different group and wanted them dead. Thank God we don't have anyone in politics who's like that now. Whenever I hear of Haman, I think of the famous remark of Andrew Jackson, who long before the kids at the Citadel decided to take gunnery practice by taking pot shots at the United States military installation in Charleston Harbor under the direction of Pierre-Gustave Tuton-Beauregard. Well, back during the nullification crisis of Andrew Jackson's presidency, there were a lot of crises during Andrew Jackson's presidency. But you got to give the devil his due. The man actually loved the idea of the republic. But his vice president was none other than John C. Calhoun, one of the most vulgar and dedicated defenders of the enslavement of other human beings. Well, he was part of the nullification crisis. And the nullification crisis was largely driven by seditionists from the home of American sedition, South Carolina Stan. And Jackson famously remarked that he was going to get on his horse because, you know, he'd already been a general in the War of 1812 and the genocidal war against the Muscogee people, the Creek people, and in the Gulf South states from Louisiana through Mississippi and Alabama and Florida. And so being bombastic and militaristic and violent, Andrew Jackson once advertised for an enslaved individual who ran away from the Hermitage and his enslavement. He advertised that anyone who caught him was authorized by Andrew Jackson, to lay on the lash to the captured runaway slave and authorized him to beat the human being with no more than 40 strokes of the whip. Jesus. But Andrew Jackson said he would get on his horse, ride to South Carolina, and he would hang the first nullificationist he found higher than Haman, and that he would then continue hanging every similarly hanging every nullificationist he found until there were no nullificationists left in South Carolina, and the threat seemed to be sufficient to the job. And it quieted the nullification movement for a little while. You know, until roughly 1861, when the aforementioned gunnery practice by the juvenile delinquents at the Citadel commenced. I got ahead of myself, y'all. But every program here at the Horn, at least nominally in this case, begins with gratitude. This program is no different. And so we say thanks to our subscribers and contributors. I heard from Zed out in Iowegia who said that he heard the joke I told about the bridge-building architect and said, I always heard it. And Zed said, I always heard the punchline was, but one sheep. Now, we don't have any subscribers for the 29th day of the month because, well, leap years. But we have a fundraising free Friday, just the same. Ralph's wanted to put a challenge out. This is this is cute. $25 challenge, says Ralph's, for Liam Neeson auditioning to play the Easter Bunny. How does one not love this? And so we'll run the clip just for the fun of it. Easter Bunny auditions today, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Whenever you're ready.
Here comes Peter Cottontail, hopping down the bunny trail, hippity hoppity. Easter is on his way.
This time, why don't we keep it light? Remember, it's for children and he's a bunny.
Do you understand what's happening here? He's hopping down the bunny trail, hippity hoppity. He's coming. He's an unstoppable force. Measured. Inevitable. Eggs aren't the only thing that'll be dying tonight.
I'm sorry, is that the bunny saying that?
If you have to ask, you don't understand the bunny's mindset.
I think I do. He's a bunny bringing candy to children.
Yes, he's a bunny. But a bunny is laying eggs. He's a freak of nature, a confused, grotesque monster. There's no telling what he's capable of. But why do you think he's holding up carrot, Bill?
Because it's what he likes to eat?
No. By employing the bunny's certain set of skills, he can gnaw it down into a shiv. Slip it between people's ribs that have ruined him.
Okay. Well, that's thanks for coming in. We'll give you a call.
Well, call soon. I need the job, and I'm running out of relatives to be taken.
Oh, my God, Ralphs. And I guess we're just into this moment, aren't we? One more little Easter moment here. I always think of the late great prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him. Yeah, this is an old piece of stand-up from Bill Hicks. There's just not enough Easter jokes out there.
I was over in Australia during Easter, which was real interesting to note. They celebrate Easter the exact same way we do, commemorating the death and resurrection of Jesus by telling our children a giant bunny rabbit left chocolate eggs in the night. Now, I wonder why we're fucked up as a race. Anybody got any? You know, I've read the Bible. I can't find the word bunny or chocolate anywhere in the fucking book. Where do you come up with this shit? Why not goldfish left Lincoln logs in your sock drawer? You know, as long as you're making shit up, go hog wild. At least the goldfish with a Lincoln log on its back going across your carpet has some miraculous connotation. Mommy, today I woke up and found a Lincoln log in my sock drawer. That's the story of Jesus. Who comes up
Maybe
with this
that's
shit?
Why Jesus hadn't shown up yet, man. He's up in heaven going, Dad, they're still wearing crosses. I'm not going. Fuck it. No, they totally missed the point. No, fuck it. No way, man. No. Okay, I'll go back as a bunny, but I'm not. Hey, aren't you Jesus? No, I'm a fucking rabbit. Shut up. Here's a chocolate egg. That's about all you can handle spiritually right now. Could y'all evolve by next Easter? This suit is real fucking itchy. Okay. I'm Jesus the bunny.
Okay, we've done. I think we've done our obligatory Easter celebration. And
what?
Going back to my obligatory Easter joke, Brother Deacon Asa says, "There's a murder hornet with your name on it." God damn it! That Easter joke is always torture. And your old Italian guy turns Chinese at the end of that joke, you racist. Wait! My old Italian guy turns Chinese. Brother Deacon, just get busy explaining to me how long and at what temperature I need to do this hunk of tenderloin in order to have it, say, medium rare. That's all I need. The Easter joke is always... Oh, goodness. You know, there is some real news out there, and I swear we'll get to it. Like, the fact that the maggots are losing... they're losing... thin gray settlings leaking out of the space between their ears because God knows they don't have any brains. U.S. District Court Judge Reggie Walton had a little sit-down with Caitlin Collins of CNN on The Source. And, of course, he's a judge from the United States District Court for the District of Columbia. And he's handled some of the January 6th domestic terrorism cases. And he just talked a little bit about what it's like to deal with threats from maggot world. And apparently it didn't sit too well with the devotee of Jesus J. Trump. Speaking to Caitlin Collins, Judge Walton said, they threatened me one day, and then the next day called and made a threat against my daughter, and also indicated they had my address. So they obviously had done some research to find out that I had a daughter, what her name was, and also where I live. And he said, it's gotten so bad that he's actually concerned. He said, it's very troubling because I think it's an attack on the rule of law. When judges are threatened, and particularly when their family is threatened, it's something that's wrong and should not happen. And so Ms. Collins asked Judge Walton about the attacks that Nitwit Nero has been launching against members of the judiciary. And he replied, when you have somebody who has status in our society and they make certain statements, it can cause people to act on those statements even if they don't necessarily intend for someone to do so. Oh, Judge Walton, that's awfully even-handed of you, sir. He continued and said, so I think it's very important that people in positions of authority be very circumspect in reference to the things that they say so that they're not called, causing others to act on what they say and maybe cause injury or death to someone as a result of that. Now, he didn't name check anybody. He didn't go into politics. He didn't talk about any specific cases either before him or before any court of competent jurisdiction in these here new 90 states of America, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth today, now forever in the universe under God. And so over on the website known as X, some maggot named Mike Davis said, well, seriously, is this a bad joke?
This is a sitting federal judge, and he's commenting on a pending criminal case against the leading presidential candidate during the height of the election season?
God, he upspeaks like a valley girl.
If so, this is highly prejudicial and extremely inappropriate.
And then later on, he posted another excrement on X.
Dear Judge Reggie Walton, lawyer up, a judicial misconduct complaint is definitely coming your way.
Then some other loser over on X who calls himself Edmund Burke having been dead for quite some time, said,
a federal judge hasn't been impeached by Congress for far too long.
I can think of one Congress should impeach. He's the crookedest man ever to sit on the Supreme Court of the United States, and that's saying something. And his name is Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Fappy Thomas, and he's so crooked that when he dies, they'll have to put him into the ground with an auger. And then someone said, someone calling themselves Coco White. Yeah, remember what Nitwit Nero calls Moscow Mitch's wife, Coco Chow? I wonder if the judge realizes he's compromising a colleague's court decision. So the appeals court is going to love this. And because it's never... It's never out of fashion for a right-wing asshole to make a reference to our concentration camp outside the territorial confines of the United States.
That judge belongs in Gitmo.
Uh-huh. Sure. They kind of proved the point of who Judge Walton was talking about by virtue of the fact that... They responded on behalf of the man who's been engaging in stochastic terrorism, even though there was no accusation made by the original speaker. Wow. And then there's the sick burn that the Biden campaign did on Nitwit Nero. Based on the fact that Biden, a vigorous 81 years old, who is already, and I'm sure you've seen it, who's already doing ads in which he mocks his own age. I'm young and handsome and energetic. I don't know why I'm even talking about this. Brilliant. Well, President Biden's out on the campaign trails. He's been in 5 cities in the past week alone. But as the Associated Press said, Nitwit Nero has had only a single public campaign event since he locked up the Republican presidential nomination on March 12th. And Biden is fundraising like a machine, according to the Daily Beast. Just last night, already with a $40 million cash-on-hand war chest ahead of Trump, God, they raked in several more millions. In Manhattan, millions in Manhattan. It sounds like an old Broadway review, doesn't it? But the Daily Beast said he's seen a significant boost in both polling and fundraising. Biden is now leading Donald J. Chump in Wisconsin, and I'll never understand why. They're tied in a dead heat in Michigan and Pennsylvania, and if Biden wins Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, come on, Roxanne, get it together. Then 2024 will be secured, as will the notion of our more aspirational than operational democracy. But seizing on all of this, the Biden campaign is, oh, they're ready. Over on the website formerly known as Twitter, the Biden-Harris HQ team said, President Biden, traveling across the country, visiting every major battleground state in 18 days, and then put up a screenshot of Nitwit Nero's own daily schedule.
8 a.m., hair. 10 a.m., hide in basement.
And this goes back a ways, because remember, it was none other than Iwanka My Daddy Trump Kushner, who said it took her 2 hours to do her daddy's hair. And remember, the stench of old dude combined with cosmetic fragrance and sweat follows him like the cloud followed pig pen in the old Charlie Brown animated features.
8 a.m. hair. 10 a.m. hide in basement. 12 p.m. lunch with white nationalists. 1 p.m. try to sell special Trump-approved Bibles to pay bills. 1:30 p.m. Project 2025 planning call. 2 p.m. hide in basement. 5 p.m. sit in golf cart. 6:30 p.m. hide in basement. 10 p.m. begin posting disturbed, confused, typo-riddled rants on Truth Social.
And over at Bloomberg, the editor there, Tim O'Brien, said, "Oh, man, gloves off." And George Conway said, "Perfection." While the white-collar crime professor from George Washington University, Randall Eliason, said, "Is Trump even campaigning?" And this goes to something else that happened over on CNN. A decidedly anti-Trump former senatorial staffer and strategist, Stuart Stevens, who used to work for Senator Bishop Willard Mitt Romney. He's part of the Lincoln Project. He showed up at CNN and suggested that, well, as we say in around these parts, that Donald Trump has donkey ears.
Biden, that sounds a lot like it. He said of Trump, quote, "All the things he's doing, they're so old, a little old and out of shape." With me now is Democratic strategist and former chief of staff for Senator Joe Manchin, Chris Kofinas, and former Romney presidential campaign chief strategist, Stuart Stevens. And Stuart, I don't really want to mince words here. President Biden is making what amounts to fat jokes about Donald Trump, going after his literal fitness as a way, I think, to maybe mitigate the overall age issue. How effective do you think it will be?
Now, hold on just a confounded minute. Saying someone is out of shape is not the same thing as saying they are fat. Out of shape just means that you're not in good physical condition, which it is no sin to say Nitwit Nero isn't. So the leap to fat shame, I mean, come on. What are you supposed to do with an underhand ball floating over the fat part of the plate about, oh, say, you know, belly button high? If you're standing in the batter's box, sorry, we're getting baseball season, you know, baseball analogies. What are you supposed to do? Just let that float by? Or do you do what any batter would do and park it, put it outside the park into the parking lot where the next sound you hear after it exits the stadium is, I don't know, a windshield cracking or the sheet metal thump of the ball hitting, you know, the roof or the hood or the trunk of a car? Well, also on the panel, because, of course, was Chris Kofinas, and he's a Democratic strategist who at one point was chief of staff for Senator Joe to the Manchin Born, who has the most
dainty and delicate of sensibilities.
Oh, spare me. So, I don't think it's fat-shaming, but let's see what the former Romney strategist Stuart Stevens had to say.
Well, look, I think that Donald Trump is the dog that chases every car, so he'll respond to this. I mean, that's something in the Lincoln Project that we've donned out on to great effect. Anytime that you're distracting somebody from a positive message like that, it's a good day for your campaign. And look, this is a good line of attack for Biden. I mean, both of these are going to be our last president who was born in the shadow of World War II. Both are going to be our oldest president. The real question here is, who has new ideas versus old ideas? And I think that's an axis that the Biden campaign really needs to drive. Because Biden, yes, is the oldest president, but his best group of voters in 20 were under 30 voters. He has one of the youngest administrations in history. And his ideas are stuff that actually help people in the future, from, you know, having a better life if you're on insulin to infrastructure and rural broadband, all of these things. And what ideas really does this party I used to belong to have now? What is any sort of policy that Trump is, other than sort of ranting about the border that he didn't fix? And I think that this is a vacuum in the Republican Party that is going to become increasingly obvious as this campaign goes on.
So Chris, I have heard debates among strategists. There are some in the Democratic Party who want to go after Trump as a threat to democracy. You know, this apocalyptic threat to democracy. And there are others who say, do what President Biden did overnight at this fundraiser, which is in a way make him seem ridiculous. Where do you come down?
Well, I'm not sure it's an either or. I'm not.
Hold on. I think we're going to have to. Because remember, this dude worked for Joe to the Manchin Born. You remember the same Joe Manchin who very butchly went after a young activist who said, who told Manchin to his face and truthfully, you've been taking money from the fossil fuel industry and you fucked West Virginia. Oh, and Joe got all tough. He was going to punch him out, remember? Hold on. There's a better way to do this. This is just going to take a second. This is what it's like when you do this, you know, entirely on your own. All right. So the dainty sensibility stylings of so-called Democratic strategist Chris Kofinas, who worked for that absolutely most decorous and most well-mannered of senators, Joe Manchin.
Which is in a way make him seem ridiculous. Where do you come down?
Well, I'm not sure it's an either or. I'm not sure actually either one is right. I mean, if you look at the polls right now, I mean, nationally, it's the race is tightened a little bit. Battleground polls don't look great. You know, when you dig into the polls, what do you find? Voters have a lot of concerns about President Biden's, you know, economic record, his positions on immigration, you know, all these kind of key issues where he has a record that he can actually, you know, talk about, but voters haven't heard. So part of the challenge here, this is where I kind of get a little uneasy when, you know, everyone loves, you know, the mudslinging back and forth. Political operatives love it. It's, you know, makes them all like gleeful. Voters don't, right? The one thing I will tell you in all the research we've done over the last year plus is voters are tired of this kind of ugly back and forth. Trump's not going to stop that. That is his modus operandi. He cannot change. I'm not sure engaging with it is really the solution. It may make Democrats feel great, but it doesn't really, I think, address the challenge here, which is voters need, you know, need to feel better about where the country is and where the country is going to go under Biden. If they don't, the race is going to stay close, and that is not a good place to be.
Stuart, you want to weigh in there?
Yeah, look, I think that the difference here is the candidate. You have someone in Trump who has absolutely no discipline, and it gives you a great ability to manipulate him. And I think that the Biden campaign can do both. I think they can go high and low at the same time. I think you can go out and give big speeches about democracy like he did at Valley Forge. And I think that you have to make this not a normal race. You know, on Election Day, when
it's
Obama
not.
Ran against Romney, we lost, by the way, but both candidates had 50% favorables on Election Day. You're never going to see that for a long time, given what's happened to the Republican Party. So I think you can do both. I think you can do both effectively. And I think there's different roles for different areas of the campaign. I mean, in the Lincoln Project, we know how to get to Trump, and Trump responds. And that's a big, big difference.
Yeah, he's right. And the little third way Democratic strategist. Oh, my God. Democratic strategist. I'm reminded of the late, great Bart Kopp, who used to say that he wanted to be a Democratic strategist because you make millions of dollars and you don't even have to win. And that was back in, you know, that was back in the early aughts. And the Democratic strategists who were running the campaigns of Gore and John Kerry. Fat Shaming asks Lee in New York, as Warner Wolf said, give me a break. I guess Donald Trump always resists the opportunity to insult, insert uncontrollable. Oh, wait. Oh, you mean a Ron Kinky Boots DeKlantis laugh? Ha ha! Yeah, uncontrollable laugh. Lee adds the Trump agenda. Don't forget, paint sneakers gold. And our Lee, with our obligatory Star Trek reference, satisfying our contractual obligation, Resurrection, earliest, where no man has gone before. The Valiant had 7 dead. No, make that 6. 1 seems to have recovered. The Changeling, Scotty, killed by Nomad and repaired. Shoreleave, Bones, killed by a knight on a horse. And repaired. Thank you. Thank you, Lee. I appreciate you having my back and keeping the elves happy. I really fundamentally disagree with these dainty and delicate types like Chris Colinas, who think this is just another election. As a Democratic strategist, I wonder if he's getting a paycheck from No Labels or Third Way or whatever. Oh, and speaking of third anything, oh dear. Rotted FK announced his running mate recently. And he has selected... Oh, I have it here. Hold on. Yeah, there we go. He selected a rich lawyer and an entrepreneur from, sorry, Matt, the San Francisco Bay Area. Not a tech bro, but a tech, well, I don't know what the word. But her name is Nicole Shanahan, and she's going to be his vice presidential candidate. Now, I don't want to be untoward. I want to judge Nicole Shanahan on her merits. She's rich, like a Kennedy, well, at least rotted FK would prefer. And she's also, while we're at it, a total fucking nut. She apparently shares the same mindset as Republicans do. When it comes to in vitro fertilization. Yeah, you get the hockey puck. She's a real Lulu, you know, chase her down with a butterfly net type. Reminder, wealth and being an entrepreneur doesn't mean that you're brilliant. Every time I see the word entrepreneur, I'm reminded of the words of Dim Leader. You know what the problem is with the French language? They don't have a word for entrepreneur. This woman has funded research into medical science to keep women from going through menopause. And I guess there could be, there would be might be a split of opinion on that, but and she wants to make it possible for women to keep on getting pregnant all the way toward their late 50s. But in regard to in vitro fertilization, this woman who has accepted the proposition, long shot, well, I mean, right up there with the sun not rising tomorrow, proposition of being a heartbeat away from the presidency, calls in vitro fertilization one of the biggest lies that's being told about women's health today. Oh, yeah. I mean, and by, oh, yeah, I mean the Christopher Lloyd. Oh, yeah. I'm not sure that there's been, like, a really thorough mitochondrial respiration study on the effects of 2 hours of morning sunlight on reproductive health. I'd love to find something like that. She was speaking to the National Academy of Medicine and she got to speak to them because she gave them $100 million. And people chuckled when she said it. But she said, yeah, let's do it. I just have an intuition that could be interesting and maybe work. No, oh, for fuck's sake. Speaking to the Australian Financial Review, she said,
at the time abundantly clear that we just don't have enough science for the things that we're telling and selling women? It's one of the biggest lies that's being told about women's health today, IVF. I spent the past 5 years funding science to understand the environmental factors that impact women's reproductive health because these have gone largely ignored. IVF is a very expensive for-profit business, and many of these clinics are owned by private equity firms that are not invested in the underlying health of women. What I care about is informed consent, not letting corporations take advantage of us. Bitch! You are a gazillionaire. You give away $100 million at a time. Shut up about corporations taking advantage of us. You have vast wealth. That means somewhere along the way you have engaged in vast injustices. Nicole Shanahan is the former spouse of Google co-founder Sergey Brin. So now we know where the money came from. She wrote an essay for People magazine in 2022, and she said, I believe IVF is sold irresponsibly, and in my own experience with natural childbirth has led me to understand that the fertility industry is deeply flawed. Oh, for God's sakes. What it boils down to is she's bitter. Because when she was trying to conceive her first child, medical professionals told her she's not a good candidate for IVF because she has PCOS. At least that's what she told the New Yorker in 2023. And a couple of years later, she conceived naturally. So that means that she, as a privileged woman of wealth, has the right to tell other women that that they shouldn't use IVF either. And by the way, PCOS is hell. Polycystic ovarian syndrome. It puts a woman's entire endocrinology out of whack and is miserably painful. And the degree of clueless privilege that radiates off of Nicole Shanahan is breathtaking. And she's, apparently she's scared shitless of menopause. Personally, I find it crazy that my reproductive organs are considered geriatric long before any other organ even begins to show the slightest decline. She said this to the Marin Independent News. I find it even crazier that we have conceded to this narrative for half of the human species. Listen, hon, you want to help? Then go to work on PCOS. Hell, go to work on, I don't know, stem cell development of female reproductive organs for young trans women, for a lot of whom one of the great stigmas is being unable to bear children. You want to make a change in the world? Do that. She has a nonprofit. She gave $5 million to the Buck Institute from it in 2020 for reproductive longevity and equality. What? You know, yeah, okay.
It's said that Ben Franklin fathered a child in his 80s. What did that mean to the child Ben Franklin fathered? Just that he never got to know his daddy. So she wants women not to go through menopause. I'll never deal with any of this. And there is some grief attached to that. But to the women in the Horn Family Community Congregation, especially those of a certain age, how would you feel about being pregnant at 65? Really? Does it sound like something awesome? Because Nicole Shanahan is dumping horse-gagging wads of money into creating septuagenarian new mommies. Having given money to the Buck Institute, she got to talk to them. And in 2021, she said, I try to imagine where we would be as a field if all the money that has been invested in IVF and all the money that's been invested in a marketing IVF and all the government money that's been invested in subsidizing IVF, if just 10% of that went into reproductive longevity research and fundamental research, where we would be today. Well, you know, maybe Nicole, we'd be in a world where women continued to menstruate into their 70s. Not asking anybody to, you know, out their age or anything, but I know women personally for whom menopause, granted with the caveat of the side effects are real pain. Hot flashes are so much fun. I've had a few of those, but I've talked to the women I know who are postmenopausal. I said, Jesus, what a break that was. No more pads, no more tampons, no more cups. And just get to live my life without being tied to a 28-day cycle. Can you imagine in the America of 2024 when, as the dissent in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health remarked, from the moment of fertilization, a woman has no rights to speak of. Can you imagine the terror of an unwanted pregnancy stalking you into your 70s? I mean, I'm not a member of the Pro Menopause Society by any stretch of the imagination. But the funny thing is, and not, I mean, the ironic thing is, if you go back and you read Plato's Republic, there's a passage in there where Socrates runs across one of his old buddies who is now, like Socrates, an old man, and says, "Hey, how you doing?" And the guy says, "I'm doing great." He said, "You know, I'm old now, and I'm not all obsessed with chasing women. I've got time now to sit down and think about the important things in life instead of getting laid." And so, to a certain extent, even some men, despite the onslaught of "Are you not getting harder than Babylonian arithmetic anymore?" advertisements, you know, find a little bit of grace and peace in it. But, you know, in her own way, she makes perfect sense insofar as she has agreed to be the running mate of a guy who says that vaccines cause autism and that it's better to have a dead child than an autistic one. That's a really shitty thing to say about neurodivergence in the middle of the third decade of the 21st century in the United States of America. Matt in San Francisco notes, when you have Google money, your wife has to be crazy for you to say, I'll be happier if I give you half of everything just to be rid of you. Sounds like that might be what Sergey Brin did. But then again, maybe it's in the water. Because after all, you know, here in the fabulous Horn Studio is a cluttered mess. And so up on the top shelf of the work desk, the broadcast desk, I have a couple of gargoyles. One's gnawing a bone and another one's got bat wings and reading a book. Well, the one with bat wings might be, you know, I think I'm going to name her Kimberly after Kimberly Gargoyle. But I'm probably going to have to get a cold chisel and chisel away the book because we know that Kimberly Gargoyle doesn't read books. She just dances to Gloria during the midst of a domestic terror attack on the capital of the United States. Oh, Lord, you think I'm being bitchy? I should bring Annette back here and say, Annette, what do you think of Kimberly Guilfoyle? Whew! I think she might despise Kimberly Garfoyle more than she hates Jerk Deluxe Vance. And that's a lot of hate. But a perfectly competent governor of California once looked at Kimberly Gargoyle and said, will you marry me? To which Kimberly Gargoyle said, yes. Honey, that was back when he was mayor of San Francisco. I think I've got my timeline right. Oh, y'all, your wife has to be crazy for you to say, I'll be happier if I give you half of everything just to be rid of you when you have Google money. And then, of course, Kimberly Gargoyle went on to a career at Fox News. You know, the home of sexual harassment, where even Fox News fired her ass for sending dick pics to her colleagues and saying, would you fuck this one? Hey, look, hung. Ooh. I don't know any women who do that. I mean, I text back and forth with a lot of my girlfriends. Never has one of them sent me a dick pic and say, hey, you want to ride that one, hon? No. Come on, Robin, says Emilio. Nicole Google is just like asking questions, you know. Ron and Raleigh says, Ms. Shanahan, from what I've heard, she didn't have the good sense not to spread her legs for Elon Musk. That in itself shows she shouldn't be VP. P.S. Some grifter's going to take her money on sunlight exposure. Well, of course, Ron, nature abhors a vacuum. But it does love a vacuous gazillionaire with more, as Jimmy Buffett once noted, more dollars than cents. So, oops, I have over-filler-oxtered. Let's go ahead and, Jeremy, if you're there, let's go ahead and connect and get me into the old holler tree so that we can get some Friday on the Front Porch going. Again, if you've never participated, it's fun and it's easy. You can use the button at headon.live to get in on the conversation. Or, equally effectively, you can use the Skype line, 844-843. Skype line. Come on, Roxanne. The stress line, 844-843-4676. And that'll get you into the conversation just as well. Okay, let's pop in there and check in with Jeremy. Hey, Jeremy, how are you? Oh, wait a minute. Cord problems. Okay, I think it works now.
I just said good. How are you?
Oh, there we go. You're good. How's Vermont today?
I heard Echo 2 do some... We don't have a foot of snow like we did Monday, but back to grass and terror, so...
Well, it's not going to snow on Easter, which is kind of an Easter miracle for these parts. But
oh, it'll snow here again before Mother's Day. It just won't be very much, and it won't stay.
We may get some flurries next week here, and it probably won't be a significant enough snow, so I can actually throw on a light jacket and some boots and walk outside and cuss at every snowflake as it falls to Earth, and hopefully melts.
It looks like you probably saw, I can't believe they're allowing it to exist, but that picture I put up of the new Trump flag, they're giving away for free.
Yeah.
A lightning bolt underneath the bottom of it. That's an issue, and people don't know that.
You do, and I do.
Yes, they're using a lot more symbols from that Reich that people don't realize exist. Lightning bolts are one of them. Two, especially at angle, means, or one at an angle, is a symbol for the SS.
Yeah, the Schutzstaffel.
Yep, exactly. Usually it was down with two straight down, but when it's across like that, going up an angle, it's still the same goddamn thing. It's just hidden.
And even the way they've got the name Trump spelled out, it participates or partakes of the same motif.
Yes, European old lettering is what it is, but still it's Germanic, yes. So it's very problematic.
Well, it's not. It's Nazianic.
Right, it's Nazianic, but it's also kind of that Hansel and Gretel original writing. I'm trying to explain like that boxy lettering. It's all, but the Nazis took that up. Yes.
Yeah, the Gothic typeface.
Exactly. I couldn't say the word Gothic is the right word. Exactly. That's what I was thinking. Yes. And I tried to report it, and all it said is, all I can say is I don't like this. It didn't give a reason why. It couldn't be specific. Of course you couldn't, because there's so many things about it, so many problematic things about it. Not to mention, the Nazi flag was red and white and black, but mostly red and white.
Yeah, with, in some instances, like the naval flag, and with some black lines through it.
Yes. But they're not saying the quiet part. They're saying the quiet part out loud now. They're not even afraid to do it because either people don't care or they don't know. And I hate to say, I think it's a mixture of both. In more cases,
I was about to agree with you before you said it.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently we're going to get snowed on Thursday.
We'll say that. I'll probably get it Sunday then or something like that.
So April 4th.
Yeah. Just a few days short of April Fool's. Well, that's all I basically have. If someone else wants to talk, they can. I'm going to make some noise here, so I'm going to mute out.
Okay, thank you. Well, anybody else want to jump in? You're welcome to. And, Steve, just because you offered up your rocking chair doesn't mean you don't get to pull up a folding chair on the porch. So, yeah, get in here.
Hi, Roxanne. It's David.
Hey, David. How are you? I saw you in the room.
I'm okay.
Okay, yeah, okay, 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 okay works.
Okay, yeah. I'm on spring break. This is the Friday of my spring break. So I go back to classes next week.
On April Fool's Day?
Yeah. And then I only have three weeks left and then finals, and then I'm done for my second year of law school.
I'm so proud of you.
Oh, thank you. I'm proud of me too.
You have a right to be.
Sometimes.
Well, sure.
Yeah. I don't really have anything to say. I just wanted to say hi.
Well, I'm glad you did. Any plans for the holiday weekend?
No. I'm going to try to I'm working as a research assistant for a professor at the school. So he's written a paper, and I'm typing it up for him. So I'll probably be working on that this weekend. And then I've got some con law reading and some secure transactions reading to do for next week. I took the MPRE, the Multi-State Professional Responsibility Examination, on Wednesday.
Oh, my.
And so I should have that, the results from that back. And they said 5 weeks. So I'm still debating on whether I'm actually going to take the bar or not, because Oregon has this new pathway to licensure that they've passed. So,
well, okay, you can't just say that. You got something that doesn't involve the hazing and torment of the bar exam,
right? So, what's this? The SPPE, the. Let me look it up real quick. Oregon passed it. This is the first year they're doing it. It's called the Supervised Practice Portfolio Examination. So instead of taking the bar, I have the option of doing 625 hours of like an internship type thing. And then so I'd have to do I'd have to work 675 hours. I would have to turn in 10 examples of writing, lead negotiation. I'm looking up the thing now. Hang on just a second. This is 8 pieces of written work. 2 initial client interviews, 2 client counseling sessions, leadership of 2 negotiations, 10 hours of activity exploring diversity, equity, inclusion, or access to justice issues, and 675 hours of work under a supervised attorney, as opposed to taking the bar exam. So I'm still debating.
Yeah, I know you probably know this, but you know what that sounds like to me?
The original way one used to be able to become a lawyer.
You hitched your star to an established practicing lawyer, and you read, and the old, you know, 19th century term was you read the law with them. it always conjured visions of some frock-coated barrister. sitting at the foot of the young student's bed and saying, "And now, it's time to read your bedtime story." Tonight's story is tortious interference with business activities.
That sounds riveting.
Once upon a time. It also sounds like extended legal clinic.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is, though, I would, like, it's like the 675 hours would be paid, as opposed to having to wait until...
That was my next question. Do you get paid?
Yeah, yeah. So, from my understanding is, attorneys have to sign up to be supervisors, and then... I would have to apply for the program and then find a job and then work, work as a provisional, I guess, attorney, after I graduate. And then once I have all the written, portfolio, stuff to submit, I would submit that to the bar, and they would critique that, as opposed to having to take the bar exam.
You know, the DEI and access to justice aspect of what you described, you know who I immediately thought of when you mentioned that. I mean, I'm not going to volunteer her or anything, but a detailed, like a detailed interview with Tracy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And her travails being unjustly prosecuted and having to live with a rap for 20 years.
Yeah.
When she was arguably not guilty and was railroaded by a conviction-hungry prosecutor.
I actually just wrote a paper about my own experience with the criminal justice system, very similar to what Tracy sounds like went through for my Access to Justice class.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. I'm getting ready to turn that in.
I wish I'd had an Access to Justice class back when I was riding my dinosaur up to Tort Flats.
It's a class that I was really looking forward to taking. It's taught by a judge on the Oregon Court of Appeals.
Oh, wow.
And she teaches the class at all three of the Oregon law schools. And that's when I learned about the, just kind of the.
So I'm guessing I'm interrupting here just ever so briefly, but I want to tie this in with a news story. You know, down in Talabama, Governor Hee-Haw Meemaw recently signed into law the ban on DEI in that state. And while there is more than one, I think, law school in Alabama, there's a law school at Samford as well. But the principal law school for the state of Alabama is, of course, the University of Alabama Law School. I was accepted there once upon a time. My, how my life might have been different had I gone there instead of WVU. I could have eaten Dreamland barbecued ribs every night while wearing my fingerless gloves and typing away on my legal briefs. Then again, you get that Dreamland sauce down between the keys and you're just screwed. But, you know, they got a law clinic and they deal with, you know, I mean, they're the principal law school of the state of Alabama. And if they had anything like a class in access to justice that mentioned DEI, guess what? That class is gone now.
I would imagine so, yeah.
I mean, just out of curiosity, have you learned things in your access to justice class you would not otherwise have known?
Yes.
Has it been valuable? Absolutely.
It has been. It's been absolutely valuable. We dove into the numbers of just how few people can afford an attorney for their civil legal matters. And because of the way that legal aid works, if a person makes over 125% of poverty level, they don't qualify for legal aid services. So there's a vast middle of America that just doesn't have the money or can afford to seek remedy for their causes in the court of law. It's almost like if you don't, I mean,
well, let's,
if
let's,
you don't have money.
Let's unpack that just a little bit, David.
Yeah.
First of all, the poverty level is insanely low.
Low, yeah.
It bears, the national poverty level bears no relationship to the lived reality of poverty. For instance, when the Affordable Care Act was passed, it was tied to 137% of the poverty level. And, of course, that's different if you're a single individual as opposed to, you know, a single mom or even, you know, a traditional two-parent household with kids. The actual number changes and you know, in terms of access to health care. But it is insanely low. It is brutally low. And talk a little bit about, what, I mean, everybody knows about public defenders and the like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but those are criminal charges. What does legal aid take in?
So legal aid does, so I worked for Legal Aid Services of Oregon last summer.
I know, that's why I asked.
Oh, and I worked mostly on tenant eviction defense. But they also do, they also take cases like family law cases, domestic litigation, child support stuff like that. They do a lot of family law, a lot of basic. I was aware of a case that the office I was working at either had done or was about to work on that had to do with getting people medical access. So your basic necessity of life stuff, right? I know they did some getting disabled children access to the education that was supposed to be provided for them. I don't remember if it was the office I was working at or if it was just one of the other offices, but I know that's something that Legal Aid Services does. But like I said, a lot of what I was working on was tenant eviction offense. Most of the people who get eviction notices will either represent themselves in the eviction proceedings
and lose,
or won't even attend and have no idea that they can defend. There are defenses to eviction notices. I know Oregon just passed recently a statute revising the Landlord-Tenant Act to provide people with additional notices and notifications. And if those notices and notifications aren't on the eviction notice, then it's an invalid notice and they can't even bring the claim into court. And so a lot of what we were doing was making sure that the notices were valid. And a lot of the motions that I was working on were to get people that had their evictions overturned to get those off of their credit history. To like motion the court to seal that record, so that it wouldn't show up on credit reports when people went back to go find new housing. But people just don't have, if people aren't moneyed, it's very, very difficult to access the court. Very,
absolutely.
Very difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, for instance, this is just a little wrinkle. This is how vicious the South can be. In the state of Alabama, if you have a civil judgment against you, the Department of Motor Vehicles can and will come and take away your driver's license.
That's indicative of how...
It's barbaric. Rigged.
It is barbaric, and it's indicative of how rigged against poor people, because in their minds, poor people means colored, right?
Sure.
And so it's indicative of how our economic and social systems are just set up to harass and persecute poor people.
Yeah, and let's be clear, it would be unconstitutional for the state of Alabama, because God knows they tried, to say that it applies to black folks. So they make it Jesus, I hate this phrase. Colorblind.
They make it facially neutral.
Yeah, that's the law school phrase. They make it facially neutral, but its effects, much like capital punishment, are anything but neutral. But my own sister, who has long since passed, got caught up in that. She had a judgment against her from the power company.
Wow.
And they came and took her driver's license so she couldn't go to work. So she couldn't pay her power bill.
And then,
the sadism is the purpose.
Since you mentioned the DMV, thankfully this is a right that's been corrected, but for many years in Vermont, first offenses for driving could be your blinker isn't working, didn't use a turn signal, mirrors broken, something like that. And finally, after years and years and years of people fighting for it, things like that have all been made secondary offenses. So if you're speeding and don't use a turn signal or you failed whatever, blah, 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 then they can nail you. But for years, that system was used against poors, colored people, you name it. It was used against them time and time again. And rich people with nice cars never were affected by these laws unless they didn't use their turn signal and they could buy off their ticket. But thankfully, that's finally been corrected. But another system's keeping certain people down on purpose, aim to do that.
Right. And the scary part about it is, if we continue down the path that we're going, most likely what the Republicans are going to back is civil commitment for not paying people's bills, right? And then we're going to have people in jail because they don't pay their power bills. Or in
debtor's prison.
Debtor's prison, yes. And so I'm a little concerned about that. You asked about what else I've learned in access to justice. I learned how the ABA was basically set up and founded to keep people out. The reason why the bar exam was instituted in the first place was to keep poor and minority people out of the bar. It's the reason why we have such a racial disparity in the bar to begin with.
And by extension, it's also the reason for the founding and creation of the National Lawyers Guild. Are you familiar with them?
I'm not.
The National Lawyers Guild was founded by black lawyers when the American Bar Association simply would not allow them membership.
So,
and they still exist. Dave.
Hey, David.
Yeah.
I'll do you one better. New York will take away your driver's license if you have a tax debt.
And then how are you supposed to pay your taxes if you can't go to work? Well, New York City.
Good luck. Good luck. I will get very personal here. I have a tax debt from, and I may have talked to Robin about this offline. I don't know. I had a really, 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 really bad couple of years where I almost ended up homeless. And I had some taxes that are due, and there is no, when it's a judgment, at least there's some sort of due process with taxes. There is no due process. New York State Department of Finance says, hey, you owe taxes. We're taking away your driver's license.
And not only that, I'm assuming they can attach any property that you own or garnish any wages.
If they choose to go after you. I mean, thankfully, I live in a state that there's a lot of very, very rich people. So I'm, you know, I fly under the radar for that reason. But, so.
Well, oddly enough, you've just, what a segue, Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hey. You know, I have a bone to pick with you.
Oh, what have I done?
Other than being fabulous and gorgeous,
Flattery will get you everywhere.
Okay. Well, that's not flattery. That's flattery is dubiously dubiously true. But that's just look at that. I'm looking at that photo there, and I'm like, man, I just have to get. I might have to just get into chicks for a while. Anyway.
Shut up.
Hey, Can we
counsel, would you care to rephrase?
Hot is hot. Anyway, okay. I'm a completely different thing. Excuse me. I haven't eaten today, so I'm a little bit, honestly, a little bit weird. You often talk about democracy here being aspirational as opposed to operational. As a person who has actually studied a number of systems around the world, I'm curious. Do you have in mind any other country? And let's talk structurally here. Let's not talk actuality. Any countries that you have in mind that actually would meet the democracy standard?
Offhand, no. I mean, if you want to go back and look at the people who invented it, basically.
No, I'm talking modern countries today.
I understand.
Okay.
There are places that are more democratic, I think.
And do you may tell you ironically
Costa Rica?
I was going to say the places that are most quote unquote democratic are probably Central America. I'm thinking Bolivia, Costa Rica. But in terms of Europe, I don't know any country in Europe that is structurally more democratic than the U.S. is.
No,
even Canada.
But I'm not engaging in comparative democracy.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm talking about, you know, high-minded ivory tower democracy. And when I say more aspirational than operational, that ain't necessarily an entire criticism. Or that's not pejorative, I should say.
And it's not only us.
No, but frankly, democracy, at its most definitional essence, is just mob rule. And you know, all you have to do is look back to ancient Athens, and you find that out pretty few.
Yeah, because. As a corollary, I am not a Democrat, small d. I don't quite know what I am.
But
I'm not a Democrat. Small
you have avowed monarchism in the past.
Yeah, I've moderated on that. But I am in favor of an elected monarch to serve a 10-year term.
Well, the thing with monarchs that always bugs me, Steve, is all the bowing and scraping. Because there is an inherent erosion of human dignity. If I have to, I mean, just think about some monarchies. If I have to bow and bow and bow and back out of the room because one never turns one's back on God's anointed, shit makes me sick.
And I agree with you. And I think that's more of a hereditary monarchy.
Sure.
But that's why I'm in favor of an elected monarch.
You know, but a monarchy in which when dining with the monarch, one must always hold one's soup spoon in one's left hand and drink soup from the far end of the bowl, you know.
That's how I would treat you. I mean, anytime when we do actually get together and we have
go to that SEC game, yes.
Yes, yes. And go to dinner anywhere, I will defer to you.
The parasol will be yellow.
Yes, and I will defer to you as your royal majesty, your royal Scottish majesty.
I'm so glad this isn't on video. I'm sitting here fucking blushing, Steve. Quit it.
Well.
Can I ask what your elected monarch, what their authorities would entail? Like, what kind of powers would they have?
In Steve's world, the elected monarch would have the power to nullify an election for instance, in 2016. The check on the on that monarch would be if a legislature by a and I'm not sure if it would be a major it would be a two-thirds or three-fourths by a two-thirds majority could overrule the monarch in any way.
So there would still be some sort of parliament or legislature.
Oh yeah. I mean, much like if you remember Star Wars and if you remember that horrible first prequel, what was that? Jar Jar Binks, et cetera, whatever the hell it was.
Please don't bring up Jar Jar Binks.
I know. But if you remember, Queen Amidala was elected.
Right, yeah, I remember.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm actually becoming less and less convinced that a written constitution is the right way to go.
So would this be a combined head of state and head of government, or just a head of state, and then you would have a separate head of government?
That's a good question. I hadn't thought of that. I mean, given that I don't know any country other than the U.S. where the head of state and the head of government are the same person. I would love someone to say who it is. Actually, Brazil, I think, has it. I think Lula is the head of state and head of government, but that's extremely rare. I don't know any European country where the head of state and head of government are the same person. Ironically, about most European countries, I don't think any European country actually directly elects their head of government.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean – A good,
the way a parliament elects its prime minister.
And even like take France, for instance, the parliament in France does not elect the prime minister. Most people think that Macron is the head of government. He's not. He is the head of state. He appoints the prime minister. And a lot of people don't even know who the prime minister is.
I don't know who the French prime minister is. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Beats me.
Yeah. He appointed. I think he did appoint somebody. I think they have to be the Chamber of Deputies. I think is their legislature has to, or they have a committee that approves his choice. But I don't. You know, I don't think anybody. I just saw Emilio said. That's what I figured, Emilio. That a lot of countries in Central and South America, it's the same person. And I think, frankly, what the countries of Central and South America kind of had the rest of the world to learn from, because a lot of those democracies are fairly young, and they kind of looked at the rest of the world and said, "Yeah, we're going to kind of do it a little bit more democratically." Like I say, in Brazil, I know Lula is the head of state and head of government. I think the only country in South America where that's not the case is Guyana, and that's only because they're a Commonwealth realm. But for the most part, I think that's the case in those countries. I mean, Canada doesn't elect their prime minister. Canada only has one elected legislature.
Okay, well, let me draw this back, and because, you know, I'm a United States-centric kind of person. And
I'm waiting for something about Rome here, but, you know. You know I had to go there at least once.
Yeah, well, of course you did. Of course yes. You did.
So you're not advocating for, like, an absolute.
Of course not. No.
No, I mean well, yeah. No.
Unless it's me. Unless it's me or Robin. Then I would be like, yes.
No, you don't want me. Queen or king. You don't want me. No.
Why?
No, I'm a bitch.
That's fine, but you'd be a bitch against the right people.
Well, I like to think so, yes.
You would. And you're fucking hot. I mean, look at that photo there.
God damn it, Steve. Which photo? Wait.
I'm looking at the one here on Skype.
Oh, the one on Skype. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I like that. Oh, okay. Yeah, that one is hot. Yeah.
Oh my God, this is Make Roxanne Blush Friday.
Yeah.
Let me, I gotta go back to a couple of pieces of correspondence, but I want to pick up the democracy discussion again. Matt was in San Francisco. David was intrigued with the idea of no bar. Wow, says Matt, that really sounds interesting. I mean, I'm no lawyer. I've seen To Kill a Mockingbird, but that setup described as opposed to taking a test sounds awesome. I've met a, this is the takeaway, and I agree entirely with what Matt's about to say here. I've met a lot of professional people that could really knock it out of the park on a test, but had the street smarts of a Yorkie puppy.
That's funny. And I mean, if you think
and,
about
and
it, too.
And Matt has experience with Yorkie puppies because of the reigning monarchical couple in the Matt in San Francisco home are Ferdinand and Imelda. And they are Yorkies.
And how many pairs of shoes does Imelda have?
Oh, well, her last litter, if I recall correctly, were all named after shoe brands.
Oh, my God. Matt, you are such a – Matt is a perfect queer. I just got to say that.
It's
– And I mean that in every complimentary way.
Yeah, every loving way. I have a complicated relationship with that word. I'm trying to reclaim it, but every time I say it, I hear my bully in seventh grade screaming it at me as he takes a swing at me.
Gotcha. I understand. I hope you don't hear that when I say the word babe, because I hope you know that I mean that in the most affectionate way. And I'm being very serious.
Yes, I do. I absolutely do. But what he said about there's a lot of brilliant academicians in law schools, and I think you know this, Steve, and David, you've probably figured this out. Who couldn't file an actual motion to continue a case. And I've seen some of the pleadings you deal with, Steve, which makes it all kind of hilarious. Insofar as I'm doing this one by myself. Annette and I are watching Betty and Joan, but I'm watching Suits, and I am so invested in Suits because it's this. Multi-season and not these 8 episodes per seasons that we have now. I mean, it's more like TV because it was on
I think it was on USA when it was.
Yeah, that's what it was, dude. And so, it's a lawyer soap opera, but it's super well written. But it's in New York City. And there's all this highfalutin shit going on, and people are, I don't know how you can, it's kind of like MASH in this regard. I don't know how you can drink that much and be a competent lawyer, just like I don't know how, Trapper and Hawkeye could be as liquored up as they were and stand in there for 8 hours just with their, up to their elbows in human innards. But that having been said, it paints this picture, and again, it's Ally McBeal and it's L.A. Law, and but this, this high rise in New York, and people never drive unless they're driving their super spiffy antique sports car. They never drive cars. They walk down, and there's a limo waiting for them, and there are these partnership wars that take place, and there are villains. I mean, the casting and characters and Gabriel Mocht is fucking hot. Sorry. And so is his secretary, Donna. And she's a ginger. Help me, Jesus. And all the legal rigmaroles of securities trading and big high-flying takeovers and hostile takeovers and tender offers. And I mean, that shit can't be real. Is it, Steve?
I'll be honest with you. I don't watch any legal shows, so I don't know what they say in them. I'm sorry. I just don't.
I know, but I mean, you see the day-to-day meat and potatoes lawyering going on. And like I said, I've seen some of the pleadings you deal with. And I swear to God, if I was a practicing lawyer there, I would send it back. I would send it back graded.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times my... Yes, he is still my law partner, even though I'm trying to extricate. We actually send we send things back and, or he sends, cause he does litigation. I fucking hate it. He sends things to me and he's like, am I stupid or is this just ridiculous? And, we just got one the other day where a person sent an omnibus docket demand that was 45 pages. So, and I'm a very simple, when I did litigation, I'm a very simple person about shit. I'm not one to, I can't tell, okay, and this will answer the question in a roundabout way. And David, this is for you. If you're in litigation and you want to demand documents for somebody, ask for what you want. Don't just say something stupid like any and all, which of course is stupid and redundant, so I don't ever say it. I will say all documents that say this. I will never say all documents between the plaintiff and anybody.
Because then you get boxes and boxes and boxes of documents.
Yeah, because I'm going to get shit, you know, hey, the plaintiff sent an email to the secretary. Hey, what's for lunch today? I don't want that. And David, we should have a talk because I at some point about proper pleadings and all that. But anyway.
Can I throw one in there? It's been a very long time, but there are things that just drove me bananas. We adopted, you know, just about every state was what was called a code pleading state at one point in time. And that along with getting rid of the distinction between law and equity were part of the reasons for the creation of the rules of civil procedure. But when I started actually practicing, I just would dull facepalm. Because, you know, we're talking about the 90s, and I would still see complaints and answers and motion practice that would begin with a phrase that just drove my English major brain up a tree. And there was one phrase. At the beginning of every complaint.
I think I know what this is going to be, but go ahead.
Comes now your plaintiff.
Oh, my God. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Oh, fuck. It just. And, I mean, after 20-plus years, we all understand that I don't always have the most. Delicate and. Proper mind. And I used to see that and I would have this mental image driving every program into the gutter since 2005. That's her. This mental image of the plaintiff.
Oh, don't even say it, but go ahead.
Having to reprint the complaint.
Oh. I'm going to take back that queen comment.
Oh, flip my head.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Comes now your plaintiff. Please pass him a Kleenex.
Oh, you really went there.
I'm sorry.
I was thinking something along the lines of, oh, wait, hold on. I can't read this until I get my powdered wig.
Well, there's that, too.
Listen, Robin and David, this is directed to you.
Wilfred, bring me my crumpets.
Bring me my crumpets. Excuse me, where is my monocle or my opera glasses to see this small print?
I fear I shall have to demur.
Oh.
Have you ever read, like, 19th century pleadings?
Yeah, because I actually worked on a case a million years ago.
They make you feel like you're on drugs.
Oh, I know. I it was See, in the UK, law in the UK still uses a lot of that stuff. So it's not like...
I'm quite certain that they do.
Yeah. I was in a case, real quick. The guy who... did we represent? I don't remember who we represented. I think we did. He was the owner of the Port Authority of the Bahamas, or at least a majority owner. He had married someone. I don't remember where he had married somebody. He had divorced her in the Dominican Republic and remarried. So we were in, I think he had died, and we were in an estate dispute of whether or not his divorce in the DR was legit, making his marriage there legit. So anyway, I remember looking at the trust and estates documents, the wills and all this stuff, because it was in the Bahamas, which of course is at least at the time, was a British realm. And I remember reading these pleadings and whatnot for the litigation there and changing the wording to, okay, I'm going to change it to simple wording. And my boss came back to me and says, yes, essentially said, yes, I know what you're saying, and the way you're saying it is the same way they're saying it, but you're not using the right words.
Your magic is off.
Yes, that's exactly it. Your magic is off. So I am very well aware of that bullshit. Or I've actually written affidavits where I use the word I, and I've seen people use your affiant. And I'm like,
I hate that possessive your.
But why not say I? This is an affidavit is like, it's like a person testifying.
Okay.
But Robin, if I were in a deposition, I wouldn't say and the person asked me a question, I say, well, your deponent says. I just can't stand that stilted shit.
And we all understand that Anglo legal systems derive from the church, okay? And there was a whole multi-generational struggle between the crown and the church for the right to sit in judgment, you know, as king, court of king's bench. Equity starts in the church. But the idea, for me, the idea of typing that I humbly prayed something to a circuit judge who was a fucking Nazi. And I'm not saying that like, you know, I didn't like him. I mean, he was a Nazi. Just really made me want to yak.
And I would have yacked with you, so yes.
And by the way, but you mentioned, you know, British legal process. I have two films about the British legal system that I absolutely love. One, of course, is Charles Laughton and Marlena Dietrich in Witness for the Prosecution, I Ducky. And the other one is A Fish Called Wanda. John Cleese with his barrister's robe when he sees his wife Wendy and Wanda, Jamie Lee Curtis, in the courtroom. And, Wanda! Wendy! That film's always worth it. What's his name? Kevin Kline. Don't call me stupid.
Robin, I wonder if we're putting people to sleep because I see people
disappearing from the room.
Yes, so.
Oh, I hate it when that happens.
Yeah.
But what you said earlier about the New York State tax structure really got my mind whirling about, you know, Nitwit Nero's fraud problem and the disgorgement. And that's New York City. No, that's the state of New York, isn't it?
Yes.
So he really, really, really has already in that one case experienced a level of deference that probably would not even be afforded to, like he was complaining. Yeah, there's never been a verdict like this. You know, Sony Music had a disgorgement amount or a judgment upwards of $1 billion, and they put up the bond. I can't get past this idea of the appellate court saying, oh, $175 million will do. It just gives me this whole something wicked this way comes sense.
I mean, honestly, it wasn't until I came to law school that I really fully kind of realized how geared towards moneyed interests in aristocracy our court system truly, truly is. And it's really disheartening. And I had a little bit of an existential crisis about it my first year of law school.
I remember that.
And it was the thing about it is, like, just the disparity of the way moneyed interests and moneyed people are treated just in our society, not only in our courts, but in our economic systems, in our political systems, in our judicial systems. I mean, that's what creates the atmosphere, the populism that people like Donald Trump exploit, you know? And you were talking about the rich progressive Democrats earlier, Kennedy Jr. and his running mate, I already forgot her name. But
Nicole Shanahan.
And I was thinking while you were saying that, I was thinking about how effete and out of touch she sounded, and how effete and out of touch a lot of the Democratic Party establishment just kind of sounds. And that's kind of how I thought Joe Biden was going to be before he got there. And it seems like he's got a lot of younger people kind of
he does, and he comes from straight up work, blue collar working class.
Yeah. But I thought his time in with the Democratic Party establishment would have negated that. But I'm happy to say that I was wrong about that. And it seems like some of his advisors, some of his senior people, come from that same kind of,
oh, of course,
DLC kind of Democrat structure from the 90s. Where it's like, if we just behave and act more like Republicans, we'll win. And
oh, the Joe Manchin wing of the Democratic Party.
Right. And it's like, the thing is, if the Democratic strategists, quote unquote, were actually wanting to win elections on a regular basis, they would actually start embracing the activist wing of the party, as opposed to trying to.
Yeah, but every time that happens, David, the centrist wing gets the fantods.
Right.
And the scabies and the rabies and the flu.
And they're the ones with all the money.
And you mentioned, you know, the progressive gazillionaires. I have been in a 20-year search for one of those. And honestly, I'm not making this about me. Honestly, I think if I ever actually met one, the first words out of my mouth would be, "Behold the coelacanth. Long thought extinct, but here they are." And I just want to take a minute because, wow, we're in the third hour of the program. As far as I'm concerned, the conversation has been scintillating. I want to say thank you again to everybody for making it possible for this to be a fundraising free Friday on the front porch. Because honestly, I crave these. I've not had to interrupt the program once to put my hat in my hand and pass it around the room. I wish I could meet one of those gazillionaire progressive J.P. Gottrocks, G.I. Love Moneys. It would be the most beautiful thing in the world. Just to have And I know I'm at this point in time, I'm engaged in probably one of my filthiest fantasies. To have, you know, somebody who would back the program and say, look, you've been here for 20 years. Look at the community that the people around you have built. And I just want to make sure that you can do this and don't have to talk about money, and you can just focus on issues and conversation. And I don't want to have any impact on the content on your program. And why don't you, here's a wheelbarrow full of money. Why don't you broadcast from a warm little island somewhere? Call me if you need more. Because the sad thing is, y'all, that shit really does happen on the right wing. Because they have that tax-exempt grift infrastructure. But again, the whole purpose of me mentioning this is to say thank you.
So you mean George Soros doesn't give you $1 million every day? Jesus.
Oh, Emilio, if only. But then again, if he did, I'd be getting attacked by, you know, my dry wife Shapiro and the lot. But it would be nice just to do the program every evening.
But yeah, to go more with that point, I mean, the right wing billionaires do that, and for every million that they give to Toilet Paper USA or whatever, they get money back. I mean, it's an investment for them.
Sure. And the other thing is, and I remember a long time ago, my dear friend Rick Smith and I, and by the way, I've thought, never mind. But, you know, we talked about the fact that if the right wing sponsors media, they say, here's a horse gag and wad of money. Let us know if you need more. Knock your socks off, say anything you want to, be crazier than a sprayed roach. We don't give a shit. Just advance the right-wing fascist agenda. If you should happen to get a nickel from a progressive organization, they will say, oh, and by the way, we will need a complete quarterly accounting, and you can only spend this on paper clips and ballpoint pens. And I know this to be true because I've experienced it in other activist spaces. And just keeping up with the paperwork for these outfits is maddening. And they don't want to give you money to make sure that you can keep your staff paid or anything, like we've got a staff. They want to give you money for programs, for concepts, for campaigns. But meanwhile, if the people working on the programs, the concepts, and the campaigns can't keep their fucking power bills paid, well, that's your problem, bub. So, I don't necessarily understand why I needed to editorialize that way, but it really did come from a space of gratitude.
Did you just say bub? Did you just misgender yourself?
No, that was a generic bub.
Okay.
That was.
Hey, I'm just looking out for you.
Thank you. Thank you. I know that.
I mean, it could mean bubble.
Well, yes. Bubette.
You've still failed to tie this whole show into ancient Rome or Greece.
Oh, no, I've already done ancient Greece, damn it.
Note that was Jeremy and not me.
I understand that, but Jeremy, try to keep up, honey. We talked about the origins of democracy being Greek, being mob rule, and I even talked about a passage from Plato's Republic. And for that matter, now that you've mentioned it, you know, there's another passage from Plato's Republic where Socrates says that the preferred form of government is a philosopher king. And remember, please, that the tutor of Alexander the Great was anybody? Aristotle. Yeah.
Aristotle.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm doing okay. I was going to say something about the Romney thing.
Yeah.
Ronald Romney, whatever.
And you know, I think that may be our first reference to her henceforward, the Romney thing. It came
the Romney
it
thing.
It came from the swamp.
It's but like they wanted a Republican voice. And when are they going to freaking realize that they're not Republicans anymore? They're fascists. There is no more Republican.
You want a Republican voice? Just go hire Liz Cheney.
Exactly.
Put her on the payroll. I don't think she's even got a job now.
Right. Liz Cheney, Kinzinger, hell, I don't know, Mitt Romney. Put Mitt Romney on there. Give him something.
Yeah, I hear he's going to be on the dole pretty soon.
I mean, they're fascists, but they just can't come around to realize it. CNN, NBC, all these other, I mean, MSNBC, a lot of the legacy media out there, they just cannot bring themselves around to realizing there is no more Republican Party. It's done.
I think they actually do realize it, and that they just don't care. They just want to make as much money as possible.
Or they don't want to admit it. Right, exactly. That money, of course, always lies you.
And well, there's something other than money, though, Kevin. Access. Access is the coin of the realm. Access is the drug that they fill the syringe with and stick it between their toes. Okay? And so they wanted, I mean, it wasn't like, well, you know, we can't get, so, you know, we'll get Ronna. She'll do it. She'll do anything. You know, live cereal commercial. They went for her because it served a double purpose. It allowed her to try to get back in the good graces of her orange skid mark God Emperor because lo and behold, he's out there saying, that MSNBC needs to be sued for ditching, NBC needs to be sued for ditching her. So goal one was accomplished. She's back in the good graces of her skid mark God Emperor. But it also, you know, the other reason for getting rid of her was the needs, obligatory Star Trek paraphrase.
The needs
of the grift exceed the needs of the many or of the few. And the other side of it was they wanted to, this is NBC hedging their bets. Because if Nitwit Nero gets back into office, you know, he will do what he can to hurt his enemies. He's already got an enemies list. And so they wanted a certain degree of insulation by saying, but listen, we've got one of your favorite people on the network, sir.
Do you think they're going to care if he does win that they have Ronna Romney McDaniel? She'll be as useless to the new regime that's coming in. They'll be like, yeah, okay, get out of the way. We got things to do.
Well, I mean, look back to Les Moonves at the Tiffany Network.
Donald Trump may not be
good for America, but he's great for CBS.
You're actually wrong about them hedging their bets in terms of the way they'd come to Donald if he ever got reelected. They'd come to him with tears in their eyes saying, sir, we hired one of your own.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at.
I mean, when you were talking yesterday about how when Todd started attacking and they started freaking out upstairs in the Ivory Tower and they put in some calls to Romney's friends to try to, you know, get people to back her up, that right there, and I knew about that story when you were talking about, I read about it, I forget where I read it, but that right there showed me right there, where their integrity is. It's talking about the management, you know, the upper management at NBC, that they were going to screw their own people over by calling on Romney's buddies to come in and say something nice about her. So that just proved it right there. So anyway, go ahead.
Well, I mean, that's because their loyalty isn't to the democracy and their loyalty isn't to the Constitution. Their loyalty is to their shareholders. Their loyalty is to the, like Robin was saying, the people that they can get access to. I mean, their loyalty is not to the American people. It's not to the Constitution. It's not to the democracy. It's to their bottom line.
It's damn sure not to the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. I mean, it always makes me a little bit crazy, David, that journalism is the only profession mentioned in the entire Constitution. I mean, the Second Amendment talks about guns, but it doesn't specifically say that the profession of gun humper shall be protected. But the Fourth Estate is protected, at least nominally. And it's like it's like the for-profit media have no regard and no respect and not even an ounce of give a damn about it.
Well, I know.
Oh, and I see Tracy. They can't get all the pictures on the screen here, so I have to look up in the corner. Tracy's with us.
Mic's off.
Yeah, she's muted. Carl's with
Hi,
us.
Everybody. Yes, I am here too. Because, you know, I don't want people to hear background noises and stuff like that.
You're driving.
Yes. Yeah. Well, actually, I'm parked. I just came back from a wonderful day trip. I never worked by the airport unless it's my airport day, but one of my neighbor needed a ride to the airport. And so I parked, after I dropped him off, I parked at like one of the last cab stands by LAX. And this black mother and son came out needing a ride, so they wanted to go to the zoo. And then I was, you know, because I live in LA, and so I was telling them about things to do, because they have, they're on their way, they just got back from a cruise this morning, and they leave tonight for their going back home to Detroit. So I took them. So they wanted to go to the zoo. So, of course, I took them to the Griffith Park Observatory first so they could get the pictures of the, you know, the Hollywood sign. And today was a beautifully, beautiful, clear day. And they were so happy. So then I dropped them off at the zoo and I just hung out because I was going to bring them back to their hotel. And I was telling them about my friend, Gurney, who, you know, the one that owns the restaurant. And so on our way back, we stopped there. And then I just dropped them, and they're just going on and on. They're like, "Oh my God, we had like 10 hours to do something in LA, and you just made our day. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you." And they tipped well too.
They tipped well too.
And they clean too.
You know that's become your sig line, right?
Yeah, that's my sig line, and they clean too. Yeah, but I've been, you know, kind of, I kind of checked out yesterday. I wasn't feeling good, so I haven't really been paying attention to, I've decided that I will not listen to or watch news at least once or twice a week. I will not have anything on my feed because it is getting to the point that, it's like, did you hear, I think I sent you a link about Tennessee State, you know, one of the few black public colleges in Tennessee, or if not the only black public college. And the governor of Tennessee decided, oh yeah, we're just going to get rid of the entire board of directors and we're going to appoint a board of directors.
How very DeClantis of them.
Right. How very, how very white of them. And it's just, it's getting to the point where I'm just tired of the attack on black people, especially black women. A friend of mine that I went to JC with, she started at Valley College, graduated from there, then went to UCLA, got a bachelor's, then went to, I think she got a master's there too. No. Bottom line is she wound up getting her graduating and getting her PhD from either Harvard. And, you know, from 2020 on, there was this rash of hirings for DEI specialists and stuff like that. And as you well know, with the attack on DEI, all those positions are being eliminated. Because, you know, racism is over. It's been 4 years, y'all. We good. Since George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery. So, you know, she did a post the other day about how she was getting offers. You know, she was on MSNBC and all these things and, you know, making all this great money. And now the money's gone. Because assaults on DEI. And I read another article about how schools are having problems in certain states keeping open their ethnic studies departments or their women's studies departments and stuff like that because of the attack on DEI. And it's frustrating and it's exhausting.
And I've got another story out of Tennessee that's the equal to that.
Oh, God. Okay, let's do this. Go ahead.
We all remember and the cop lynching of Tyree Nichols.
Yes, and they were black cops, which made it even worse.
Right. So, miracle of miracles. The Memphis, Tennessee city government passed rules, ordinances, that took away the power of the Memphis PD to use to take away the power of the Memphis PD. They want to defund the police. No. It was just an ordinance that said Memphis cops cannot use pretextual stops like a broken traffic light or your license tag light is out as probable cause to stop.
And we just passed a law like that in California as well.
Well, hold on. This don't have no happy ending.
Oh.
The MAGOT legislature of Tennessee signed or passed, and Governor Bill Lee, the MAGOT governor, signed into law. A law that erases those police reforms that Memphis enacted. So pretextual stops are still cool.
So the equivalent of stop and frisk.
Yeah, well, I mean, just you know, bullshit stops.
Right.
You know, you pass under a yellow light, and the cop says, "No, it was red."
Mm-hmm.
Or your tail light's broken, or your license plate light is out, or your window tint is too dark. And the city of Memphis was trying to make sure that homicidal goon squad behavior didn't happen again. Because the entire city is still suffering from what those pigs did to Tyree Nichols, who is still very, very busy being very, very dead. And so the governor Bill Lee said, "I think what's most important for us to remember is that we can give law enforcement twos, but we got to hold law enforcement to a standard of using those twos appropriately, where there's an appropriate interaction with the public. That's not what we understand has happened all the time, and certainly their family would attest to that."
Is the law here in Cali, not only can they not do those stupid-ass stops, but that bullshit line, "Do you know why I pulled you over?" They can't even say that. They have to tell you why they pulled you over.
Good.
Is that, "Do you know why I pulled you over?" And the smart response would be, "Because I'm black." But, you know, we can't say that shit. Yes.
Hi, this is Carl. I love when you call in. I love hearing you tell stories and stuff. Thank you, sweetie. It's one of those things. One of the main reasons why I call this show, besides the fact that my undying love for my sister Robin.
Oh, aww.
Aside,
I love her too.
Aside from that, but it's very important for me to, even though it is not my job to teach white folks about what it's like to be black in this country and a queer black woman at, on top of that, but it's important for, you know, our stories to be told, and that and hopefully that enacts action, more action on your part or more research on your part to understand, you know, and reading books and just to understand what it is to be black in America and to understand that, you know, that whole pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, and kind of hard to do that when you got to decide, let's see, do I pay for rent? Do I buy groceries? Do I pay for my medicine? Do I, you know, especially, you know, a report came out last year that if you do not make at least more than $70,000 a year in the city of Los Angeles, you, that is considered poverty. You cannot function in LA and have a decent life and make less than $70,000 a year. It's not feasible. And they just came out with a report this morning. They're like, in order to buy a starter home in Los Angeles, you have to be the combined income or your own income. You have to be making at least $315,000 a year.
Oh my God. Well, I'm envious of you living in LA because I really love California.
Right. And see, here's the thing, you know, yes, it is expensive for me to live here, and my asshole landlord literally just doubled our rent because we have this law in the state of California that was written. It is a really racist law, but we now have renter protection, especially in the city of Los Angeles, as far as how much your landlord can raise your rent. I think the cap now is like 6% per year. Except if you live in unless you're renting a condominium or a single family home, and we rent a single family home, so they can raise their rent as much as they want to. And my landlord is literally our rent's going from $2,200 a month to $3,800 a month. Oof. But he was really generous to say, well, it's not going to take effect right away. I'm giving you 3 months. But motherfucker, what?
Well, I lived in L.A. in the 80s. When I was young and hot and all that stuff. So, I mean.
You're probably still hot, baby. Don't
which actually got me into a lot of trouble, you know. And I lived in the Hollywood area. So that was of it.
Uh-huh. Did you spend a lot of time in Silver Lake?
Yeah. And also just walking around. And, you know, the last time I went to L.A., I went to the Hollywood cemeteries.
Oh, Hollywood.
Yeah, it was so cool. And I took a picture of myself laying next to Bela Lugosi's headstone. Yep.
Headstone, yep. Hollywood Forever, for you guys don't know, there's a lot of fame. That is a really cool story that there's a lot of, you know, famous Hollywood stars that were buried there. It was basically where a lot of them were buried, but it had fallen into horrible disrepair. And these guys, I forget where they're from, came in and bought it and restored it. And so that's where I had my father's funeral. But what they do is, like, when the weather warms up, they have movie screenings, like, you know, old school movies, like.
Oh, that's cool.
And you bring your picnic. I mean, and it sells out every day whenever they. If you don't buy, you can't, if you want to go, as soon as the tickets go on sale, you better buy the tickets or you will not be attending. And so you bring your picnic lunch and your lawn chair, your, you know, your bottle of wine or whatever, and sit amongst the stars and the headstones of Hollywood greats like Bela Lugosi and I think Rudolph Valentino.
There's a lot.
There's a lot. and you watch a cool movie and they
Joan Crawford
and stuff like that. It's a really, I've never been. Because I hate the parking situation. The parking over there is trash. So I tend not to go there, but I've, in my travels and rides as a cab driver, I've dropped off a lot of people there. And it's huge. I don't know if they've done anything since COVID, but it was a huge deal. And
there's a few of those movie star cemeteries.
Yeah, there's
the one that's like a Catholic one.
Right. And there's one over in Westwood where Marilyn Monroe was buried or is buried. And then there's Forest Lawn where just about, you know, if somebody, big time people die, because there's two Forest Lawns. There's the one that's in Hollywood. And then there's the one that's like right off the 101, well, the 101 34 freeway. And then there's the one in Glendale. So there's two Forest Lawns cemeteries.
Well, I don't remember which one I went to, but I did see the mausoleum where Michael Jackson is.
That's the one in Glendale.
Okay. And it was so funny because, I mean, it was really cool and everything. You can't go inside, you know, you can just look through the window. And there was a car there that had Michael Jackson stickers all over it.
Wow. Well, that's where Debbie Reynolds and what's her daughter's name?
Carrie Fisher.
Carrie Fisher. They're buried together at Forest Lawn.
Oh.
And when they died, as a matter of fact, their funeral was open to the public. Because, you know, Carrie Fisher died, and like a week later, her mom died of a broken heart.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I would feel, okay, so of course her son was still alive, Carrie Fisher's brother. And how do you think that makes the brother feel? Okay. So obviously, it's like, so my sister dies, and then you die later. So what kind of relationship?
What was that? Chopped liver?
I know.
It's like, wait a minute. Mom, I'm still here. Fuck you. My baby died.
Let me interject for just a moment, if I may, please. A couple of notes coming in from Matt in San Francisco on two separate topics. One, preach, sister. Try being a nonprofit, because talking about being funded, you know, by doing progressive things and being funded by progressive organizations. Preach, sister. Try being a nonprofit health center trying to get funding for harm reduction. For fuck's sake, you can't even say needle exchange.
So ridiculous.
And the sadism is that, you know, no, we don't want them exchanging needles. We want them fucking dead.
Exactly.
And Matt adds, going back to what you were saying about living in L.A., low income in San Francisco. If you're making under $105,000 in San Francisco, the state of California considers you low income. Single-person households making under $105,000 a year are classified as low-income in the Bay Area counties by California's Department of Housing and Community Development. I mean...
Well, that's probably why What's-Her-Face wanted... I forgot her name. Wanted to...
Nicole Shanahan.
Lady that was running against, the guy.
Oh, Katie Porter?
No.
Okay, I'm 0 for 2.
The African American one.
Oh, Barbara Hill.
Yes.
Oh, no, wait.
She proposed the $50 minimum wage.
Yeah.
And that's starting to make sense now. After what you told me.
And you know what? There is an alternative to that, though. And this is me channeling the spirit of my dear departed beloved friend, Bossman Wayne. There's an alternative to a $50 minimum wage. It's called a fucking union.
That part.
You unionize this country, and it gets better in a hurry. The fact of the matter is, the United States of America should be embarrassed by the fact that we even have one billionaire.
Thank you.
We should be absolutely mortified by the notion that we have someone who in their lifetime, sorry about the pronoun Leon, will probably become the world's first trillionaire.
That's disgusting. I mean, you know, there's people like me who are barely existing.
I know a little about that.
My prescriptions are $10,000 a month.
A month?
Jesus Christ, Carl.
If I had to pay for them, that's what it costs. But luckily, I'm on Medicare now. And, you know, there's a program here in Arizona called ADAP, which covers all of my copays.
Because I have something similar in California. I'm on Medi-Medi, so I have Medicare and Medi-Cal. And fortunately,
West Virginia has entered the room.
I used to have like
dropping $1,200 a month on or $1,200 a year on estrogen seems like nothing compared to you, Carl.
But you know the thing is that now, you know, then I was really happy being on the state's Arizona's version of Medicaid, which is Access, and Medicare. So I was on, you know, I had Medicaid as like my advantage plan. And that was awesome because I didn't have to pay for going to MRIs and all that stuff.
None of that.
But then when I tried to reapply, I was over income, which is insane.
But and that's the thing. See, right, okay, the other day, when did I call in? Tuesday, Wednesday, whenever I called in, and I was talking about my passenger who was literally in tears because she's on Section 8. And they're trying to force these white people trying to force her out of her apartment. And they give her $23 a month for food stamps. Now,
oh yeah,
we have talked about minimum wage. I mean, I'm sorry, low income in California, in Los Angeles County is $70,000, and then Matt is in San Francisco is $105,000. But the federal poverty level has not been adjusted for such a thing. Because if it were adjusted for people who are making...
Because we live in a world that is afflicted by a plague called Republicans.
Right.
Was this the same passenger that went on the cruise? And I only asked that because I can hear what the conservatives will be saying right now.
No.
Oh, thank God. Okay. Jesus. Oh. No, I hear him saying, why is a Section 8 person going on a fucking cruise? I can hear right now. I just can hear it echoing.
Right.
Yeah, because they already say, why do they have a telephone? Why do they have a television? Why do they have a roof?
And
I know.
And jump on that medical thing. I hear what Carl's saying. A lot of people here know I have type 1 diabetes. I wear a special device to monitor my blood. It works with my pump. Well, every year, before they'll do anything else to supply this thing on my arm, I pay $450 up front before I pay my monthly payment to get my devices.
Oh, God.
This year I went through... and it jumped to $656. So damn near $700 just to start receiving my devices without having it.
If I didn't have insurance, it'd be
$4,000.
That's terrible. But I take the most expensive one is Biktarvy, which is a few thousand dollars monthly. And then I have to take something because my pancreas doesn't produce enzymes. Which is that drug is expensive too.
What are those two pancreatic things, enzymes I'm thinking about? Because I've had pancreatitis.
Well, my pancreas is like there's a part of it that's just like dead meat. I can't describe it the way they did, but and it doesn't produce the enzymes that you need to digest food. So I have to take something called Creon, and I used to take one called Genpep. And basically what it is from a pig. They get it out of a pig's pancreas. But I have to take it every time I eat, because if I don't, then I'll be in the little boy's room for hours. So it's no fun. But now I switch to Cigna. Advantage plan, which sucks too, because, you know, you have to pay like $150 a day to just go to the hospital.
You see, and it's, you know, when I first got on Medicare, because I have SSDI, you know, Social Security Disability Insurance. And so when I first got on SSDI, I was just using Medicare because most doctors in California, well, Los Angeles, you don't need to have anything else because they just take the Medicare, right? And so it wasn't until I found, you jackass, it wasn't until I found out that I needed brain surgery and my neurosurgeon nurse was like, you need to go get on Medi-Cal. I'm like, for what? That because if you don't, you'll be responsible for that 20% copay for the hospital bill.
Yeah.
And so that's when I got on Medi-Cal. But for the most part, I rarely have to use my Medi-Cal supplement because, like I said, the majority of the doctors that I have just take the Medicare, and they're good. But then again, I live in civilization.
Yeah.
Speaking of civilization, I just got a note from Lou in PA. There's a cowbell involved. Going back to the cost of living. Simply this. Everyone moved to Beckley. No. Nobody moved to Beckley. But all kidding aside, over on one of the social media platforms, there's a subset that's devoted to West Virginia. And I don't know who's responsible for this, but someone has said that West Virginia is the cheapest place to live in the United States.
Oh, God.
And
I saw a video.
And certain people are looking at us and going, well, they got a nice maggot government there. They must be, it must all be white peoples. I mean, the guy who wrote the fucking Turner Diaries was from West Virginia. Okay, the Turner Diaries that inspired Timothy McVeigh to murder a bunch of children and blow up the Murrah Federal Building in, what, 1995 in Oklahoma City? That guy was inspired by the guy who wrote the Turner Diaries. Dude lived in West Virginia. I was actually working as a lawyer when the news broke that law enforcement had uncovered a plot to bomb the new FBI center in Clarksburg. And I actually knew people in my county who were having a shit fit waiting for the feds to knock on their door. And I was told the names of a few of those people, which I've mercifully forgotten, and one which I haven't. We've long had a Nazi problem in West Virginia. And I think that's part of why I'm so focused on it, because I've been watching it for a very long time. So you got a bunch of people from Arizona, too. Yeah, you got a bunch of preppers who want to move to West Virginia and live in a hand-built doomsday shack in the middle of 50 acres. And it got so bad on this site that the moderator said, listen, stop posting I want to move to West Virginia posts, because it's becoming annoying. And the other part of it is that the people would respond to these posts saying, stay the fuck where you are. We're already being priced out of our own homes. We're already, you know, the property taxes aren't that high, but if you're not that well off, property, it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
And so, you know, and of course, living literally within walking distance of a national park as I do, I see it happen in real time. The entire economy of my little local community is service industry, restaurants, resorts, that kind of thing. And people move here to work here because, like, they'll come here once and go whitewater rafting and rock climbing and what have you. And then they're like, I want to live there. And I understand that because I've been places where I felt that way too. But then they get a job, they come here, and they can't find somewhere to live. And, you know, I should, one of these days I should go and take pictures of what I'm talking about when I say old coal company houses. My father was born in one. And it's still standing. And I know personally of old coal, and you know, what y'all talk about home prices in L.A., San Francisco, and what have you, just blows my. I don't know what you do to make the kind of money you make to be able to pay a mortgage in one of those. I remember all the way back to Who Wants to Marry a Millionaire. Dude had a 3-bedroom brick ranch style somewhere near San Diego, and that made him a millionaire. And how long ago was that? The early right. aughts.
Early aughts.
Well, so it's not like that. But these old coal company houses are literally shacks. And I've seen them on the market for $150,000 a year to purchase.
Mm-hmm.
Rents at $1,000 a month for a place that I wouldn't have paid $200 for 20 years ago. I'm old and cranky.
Since you mentioned Nazi problem and stuff like that here in Vermont, feel good story for you. Actually, in this case, it turns out to be there's a guy in southern Vermont. He may have made national news. I'm not sure, but he owned a militia training center, which just screams out Nazis aplenty. And for the longest time, the state was trying to find a way to shut him down. And they started taking satellite photos of the place with some of these sites that can do that. And they started seeing outcroppings of buildings which were not declared on his state taxes. So the state went in after a few different tries under heavy police guard, saw some buildings, said, you have 30 days to remove this buildings, or, you know, we're going to shut you down and come arrest you. Well, the 30 days came and went. He hadn't shut down the buildings. So the police, not the police, but the judge put in a bench warrant for him. No police would serve it. This went on for about 6 months. And then finally, it got kicked up again. Another judge issued a bench warrant. Well, this time they finally said, fuck it, and they went to arrest him. He fled. So they thought. For the last 6 months, I guess he's been hanging out in Vermont hiding, but they finally caught him 2 weeks ago. And he fought with the cop not to be arrested, punching, pepper spraying, you name it. He's now in jail for lack of $100,000, and his militia site is shut down.
Hold up. Did Trump pay that bond? Even though they – oh, no, he has 10 days.
He ain't got it yet. And some, as outrageous as I find it, Tracy, sometimes I find myself wondering – if maybe the appellate court was playing the give him enough rope game. And so he comes back and he can't get the $175,000, and then shit gets real fast.
A lot of experts are saying they did what they did to make his appeal almost not work. Basically, they gave him more fairness than he needs. So when he cries poverty, I can't pay this $460, he said, tough luck. You've already had more than the average person, and they can nail him for the full amount and get it.
Oh, good.
So now when is the money
due? Middle of next week, maybe next Monday, maybe the 8th or something like that, or the 9th, something like that.
Well, it was due on this past Monday, and then I gave him an extra 10 days. So, yeah, that's like Wednesday or Thursday of the upcoming week.
And he won't have it. He couldn't get the 89, whatever, 83 for E. Jean Carroll from Mooney's or whatever the company did it, because they said you're too much of a risk after he.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I have to interrupt, Jeremy. You just said he couldn't get the $83 million from Mooney's. And my first thought was, and then he went to the Hare Krishnas.
Was it Mooney's? I forget what it was. But anyway, he couldn't get the 83. And they came up and said, we'll do it. Then they backed down and said, you need to put up the $100 million for us for bond to back what we're going to put up because you're too much of a risk. He's not going to get the $175. No one will do it. He doesn't have it. Even though he claims he's going to get $3 billion from this true social deal, it's not going to fucking happen. It's going to be a penny stock by that time. It's going to die. It's all just pump and dump. It's all it is.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be garbage. And if he gets if he gets the go-ahead from his board to sell shares and generate $3 billion, well, the first question is, will that still allow him to maintain majority ownership? And then the second question is, I wonder if this might expose him to further legal liability. Oh, dear God, I feel like one of the characters on Suits. I wonder if this might expose him to legal liability based on the fact that it's... how is that not insider trading?
That part!
Am I wrong?
Fuck!
Well, y'all, we just hit 8 o'clock, and it's time for me to wrap things up. This has been an extraordinary Friday on the front porch. It's also been a wonderful one because I haven't had to say a damn word about fundraising. And I, again, I am so grateful for that. To end the month fully funded and not sweating the first broadcast day. It's wonderful. That said, I have a message from Jessica in the Greater Rochester Metropolitan Co-Prosperity Sphere. You have no idea how long it took me to memorize that. Jessica writes, Roxanne, a wonderful International Transgender Day of Visibility on Sunday to you and all the trans femmes, trans women. Okay, I'm just going to take a moment. I find the term trans femme problematic. Jessica, I love you. But for those of you who don't see it all the time, the term trans femme and trans mask were coined for non-binary people, for non-binary trans people who lean toward femininity, trans femme, and non-binary people who lean toward masculinity, trans mask.
Oh, I get it.
Okay? I'm not a trans femme. I'm a woman. And I know people of transgender experience who are men, and they say, I'm not a trans mask. I am a man. Period. And so it is kind of invalidating for me to be referred to as a trans femme, because that's not what I am. I'm binary. Just a girl. It's an umbrella that's nothing. Basically, it's an umbrella that's nothing but ribs. On the other hand, and I hope I'm being helpful here. I'm not trying to be bitchy. We say over and over and over again, and if you see it in print, I'd just like you to be aware. If you see someone writing trans woman as one word, or trans man as one word, understand that is transphobic. Because it's suggesting that a woman who is of transgender experience or a man who is of transgender experience is not fully a woman or fully a man, but is rather some sort of other. Because trans is not a noun. I'm not a trans. I'm a woman of transgender experience. And so we say over and over and over again, it's trans woman, like you'd say tall woman. You don't say tall woman. You don't say right-handed woman. You say right-handed woman. And I see it all the time, and words mean things. So, I just want to be a help to my cis allies. And I love each and every one of you. And building awareness matters. And it drives me a little bit crazy that we say trans femme at the same time we say trans woman is othering. And trans woman is othering. But somehow trans femme is not? Well, it's not because it is a specific usage for non-binary individuals. But it is not a catch-all for anyone who is feminine and of transgender experience. Do I make sense? Anybody?
Yeah.
Just, I would appreciate
it. Totally.
Okay.
Thanks for the lesson.
Well, thank you.
I'm a trans bitch.
That makes sense. Definitely makes sense. And I've been guilty of saying that. Especially the term trans feminine. But I know the mistake now I'm making. So I'm not non-binary, for the record.
Yeah, I get it. And I'm not either. And it feels a little bit like being erased because I busted my ass for this. It's the hardest work I've ever done and the most gratifying, most validating thing I've ever done.
And you allowed us to be part of that trip.
Oh, you're still on the ride. You bought the ticket. You're taking the ride. But I want to go back to what Jessica said. A wonderful International Day of Transgender Day of Visibility on Sunday. To everyone in the Horn Family Community Congregation. Yes, and this is so important, even those in the closet, we see you, and you're just as loved, appreciated, and validated as those of us who are out. God, Jessica, don't make me cry. Because I used to be one of those. And in terms of this community, I was one of those until December the 31st, 2020. And I will never forget that day. We love you and we support you as best as we can until you feel you're ready to join us here. And I will personally toast your coming out with a cocktail party of the Molotov variety. Jessica, you little Bolshevik, you. Speaking of, Sunday marks the fourth anniversary of me coming out, and as such, let me celebrate by giving you $4 and another $6 as an observance of mine and Susan's sixth wedding anniversary this past Valentine's Day for an even $10. So you don't start April with a goose egg. Jessica, I love you and I love Susan. And I hope you know that.
I'd like to say something here.
Please do, Haley.
As of Monday, Haley, Nicole and my surname is now my legal name.
Congratulations.
I'm so happy for you. You've crossed a milestone.
It's a big milestone.
Yeah. Especially where you are.
And Rob,
very much
forget.
So.
I love your voice, by the way.
There's a night that I told the whole horn who I am and what I am.
My voice isn't that great. I'm still working on it.
Oh, it sounds nice. The accent.
I'm sorry, Jeremy, please continue.
Oh, I thought I was muted on the end, and I couldn't see myself lighting up. My bad. I was going to say there's that night that I told the whole horn who I am for the most part, and you. And I heard in your voice you are, and I knew exactly what was going on, but I couldn't say anything. I heard the question in your voice. Other people don't pick up on it unless they're like us. I picked up on it instantly.
Yeah. I had support when no one knew that I was getting support. I think about Cynthia. And like I said, she feels like the big sister I never had. Because of how my big sister has behaved.
Yeah, I remember when you called me and like Tracy asked something to tell you, and I'm like, because when you said it, you know what I was gonna say? Okay, so you're gay, right? I didn't say it. I just waited.
No, it's like I did. I told somebody and they said, "Oh, you're gay," and I'm like, "No, it's worse." It's a lot worse.
It's all worse. I remember when I told my parents I was gay, and they were like, we already know. Whatever.
Well,
with those Mary Poppins lunchbox.
The Mary Poppins lunchbox, yeah. I know.
Well, I mean, come on.
I asked for a Barbie one when I was like, five. That went over like a Led Zeppelin. And I wound up coming home with I asked it of my auntie, who would be dead within a year, whom I loved. And she just said, let's don't. How about this? And came home with a man from Uncle lunchbox that I carried to my first day of school. There's one of these stories for everybody. All the way back when I was living in Atlanta, a dear, dear friend of mine called me because, you know, this was back in the Stone Ages when we didn't carry computers around in our pockets that were more powerful than the one that took us to the moon. Isn't that amazing? Leon Scum has computers that are a billion times more powerful than the ones that took us to the moon, but he can't stop his dick rockets from blowing up.
Well, it's called, what is it?
Karma.
Premature ejaculation.
Yeah. But I was living in Atlanta in the late go-go 80s, and a friend of mine called, and she said, listen, would you meet me at this wonderful bookstore that had there was a bookstore with a coffee shop in it in the late 80s in Atlanta. I mean, wow. There was a Kroger's with a sushi bar in it in the late 80s. Next to a magnificent disco with a house band that included a horn section. And it was on Piedmont Road. Oh, that was a place to go. But anyway, she called and said, can you meet me at the bookstore? I've got something I need to tell you. I said, you can't tell me now? She said, no, it's important. I said, okay. And so we met at the appointed time, and I sat down, and we had our coffees, and we both had books that we were going to buy. You start reading them first. And she took my hand across the table, and she said, Robin, this was before Bob. She said, Robin, I'm a lesbian. And I hope you won't stop loving me. And I remember looking at it and looking at her and saying, that's it? That's it? You're gay? You made me wait a week to tell me you were gay when I spent an entire week thinking you were going to tell me you were dying of some sort of godforsaken cancer? Oh. Shame on you.
Wow.
Of course I love you. I've loved you since the moment I met you, and I will keep loving you as long as you're on this planet.
Yeah.
And I will love whoever loves you, and I will love you, whomever you love.
Unless they're an asshole.
But what she didn't know is she was telling it to a little closeted trans girl.
I know.
And so, Tracy, you and her and Matt in San Francisco were three of the first people I told. Outside of my immediate circle here.
It was an honor because, you know, like for my story, I didn't come out. I was not closeted. I just became my authentic self. And when I tell people, it's so, you know, straight folks or whatever, they're so single-minded with certain things. It's because of the abuse that you suffered because of your stepfather. I'm like, no.
No.
No. That had, one had the other. That's why you turned to women. I'm like, no. I fell in love. It's just that simple. It's like, you know, so I fell in love with somebody that happened to be the same gender as I am. And I was, it's just that simple. It's nothing convoluted or free, nothing. I mean, and I lost friends. My family lost my mother. Now, this is an educated woman who has a, you know, master's degree, two bachelor's degrees within the, you know, as a nurse. And said that white woman turned you out. And I'm like,
ooh, that's so vulgar.
There's just, and when she said that to me, so you're taking away my autonomy as a grown, I mean, y'all remember, I was 45 years old when Jen and I got together. So I had lived, you know, I had lived a full ass of half of my life already, almost. And you're going to sit here and tell me, and then she said, well, what would happen if Alex told you the same thing? I said, I would be like, okay, are you happy? I don't give a fuck who
it's
you
It's like,
are.
Well, I'd be okay with it, but it sounds pretty obvious to me. You ain't.
Right.
Right. Well, when I told my friend from Atlanta, I started out by saying, you remember the day you came out to me? And she said, yeah, typing. I said, my turn. So y'all, Sunday is the Transgender Day of Visibility, and I've already got my dress picked out. And no, it's not going to be a big deal. Just, hell, don't have anybody to take pictures of me, so I'll just go somewhere and take selfies and hope they're not hideous. But I got to get out of here. I hope you all, thank you all for participating. And thank you for some wonderful conversation this evening. It absolutely is. And by the way, to everyone, please, please, please kindly excuse and pardon Steve and David and me for getting all law nerd. It really wasn't that bad. And what I mean by that is you don't know how bad it can get when people who have been to law school start law nerding. It's not pretty. Right, David?
Absolutely correct.
Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. I'm making crab cakes tomorrow and homemade remoulade. And no, Tracy, there's no raisins in the remoulade, so you can stand down from sweat condition alpha.
But no, there's mayonnaise in it, though.
All right. Yeah. Moses wanted the children of Israel to make bricks without straw, and you want me to make remoulade without mayonnaise.
Oh, before I forget, Robin, are you ready for this?
Bring it.
They are now selling Duke's mayonnaise at my local Ralph's.
Buy it. It is arguably, and I would participate in it. I love me some Hellman's, or best to you.
Best food, bitch. Best foods.
But Duke's is arguably better than best or Hellman's.
When I saw that, I'm like, oh my God.
You know, girl, they make tartar sauce too. And the tartar sauce, it's not as good as mine because mine is a secret. But Duke's tartar sauce is pretty damn respectable.
I can't do it, sis. I can't.
Oh, I mean, I know. Listen, you know, gotta walk before you run through the mayonnaise, okay? I know that.
It's on sandwiches and stuff. Like I said, I'm married to a white woman, and when I write my book, there's going to be a chapter in my book that said, entitled, This is What I Give an American White Woman. I'm not playing. Y'all think I'm kidding.
No. It'll be right up there with Louis Grizzard writing about his first marriage, and there's a chapter in there called Pantyhose on the Curtain Rods and Raisins in the Rice.
Oh, and so I have eaten more mayonnaise in the last 12 years than the entirety of my life.
And your life is the better for it.
Yeah, whatever.
Oh, mayonnaise. Well, I feel bad. I ate Great Value.
But you know what? The Great Value and the Kroger brand mayonnaise?
Yeah.
It's probably both Kraft.
Yeah, I think it probably is Kraft.
And you can be proud of yourself, Carl.
Okay.
Be proud. Pride, honey.
And I
it ain't Miracle Whip.
Oh,
Oh, never. Never, never, never.
I just had to start that shit before I leave. I love you guys. Thanks to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Ralph's had a challenge on the table this evening, but I didn't pitch it because I promised a fundraising free Friday on the front porch. But if someone wants to meet it over the weekend, that's awesome. It's the $25 Liam Neeson as the Easter Bunny challenge. Thanks to all of our a la carte contributors and challenge makers and challenge responders. Thank you all so much. You're the only reason this program exists, because neither you nor I know any progressive gazillionaires. And who wants to do all that paperclip accounting in the first place, right? Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Enjoy your weekend vacation, Roger. Thanks for popping by in the chat room just the same. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon. Asa, head on .live. Remember, like and subscribe to the podcast, please. It helps. Costs nothing. Not even much in the way of time. Leave a comment. That way you're helping to build and sustain the program that way. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. From the very origins of this program, he has been a repository for the program and for so many more. If you want to download programs from the White Rose Society that are there, please download them before June the 1st. Because on June the 1st, the White Rose Society will go dark. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 25 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Stay safe. Check and see when your next booster is due. Wear your mask if you're around maggots because, well, goodness me, they seem to like pandemics. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance as best you can. Try not to get this. Try not to get even a variant, the latest variant. Even if you're boosted. And God knows, if Nicole Shanahan comes toward you saying, I want women to keep having their periods until they die at the age of 112, avoid her like the plague, because she is. And always, 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 Gina and Wayne, it's all for you. Have a great Roxanne. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.